shotglassdigital.com. Rebel Force Radio is brought to you in part by Little Debbie Snacks and their new Cosmic Cupcakes. To learn more, go to littledebbie.com/cosmic cupcakes. With movies, gaming, books, comics, and collecting, a Little Debbie snack makes everything a little sweeter. Little Debbie, official snack of the galaxy.
DorksideToys.com. For the latest Star Wars action figures, Marvel, G.I. Joe, and more, visit DorksideToys.com.
A small rebel force has penetrated the shield and landed on Endor.
This is where the fun begins.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
This is Rebel Force Radio.
Your source for the Force.
Star Wars news and commentary.
With Jason Swank and Jimmy Mack.
I've seen Star Wars 500 times. Star Wars number one!
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe. I suggest we use it.
Now it's time for Rebel Force Radio.
We would be honored if you would join us.
Well, hopefully I can be a little bit of luck added to the crew here with a brand new commentary, our celebrity commentary series of all six Star Wars films featuring Sam Witwer. As you know, if you've been listening to Rebel Force Radio for the last several weeks, you know that a terrible tragedy befell the recording that was done several weeks ago. So we're taking another shot at it. And I have to tell you, I am not the least bit disappointed because I get to participate now.
Woo.
So hopefully, I'll bring a little bit of luck. And we've got the original cast of characters from the last try, starting with my good friend and yours, the guy who blew the recording.
Hey,
Jimmy Mack. What? What? From Chicago, Jimmy Mack.
Hey, Jason. Hey, Star Wars fans. Yeah, we're glad to be back finally. A show that Jason has been calling Cursed. We're hoping we have multiple recordings going on this particular evening, and it was not my fault.
Yeah,
it was not.
That's what all, yeah. Oh. But he fixed it.
See,
it's not my fault.
So of course you hear the voices of Sam Witwer and David Collins joining us once again.
It should be noted that we've tried to do this commentary multiple times, and each time someone different has crapped out, and tonight was my night. I showed up 30 minutes late for this, so I'm full on flaunting my shame for the world.
Yeah, but we just kept on talking till you got home,
and then we kept talking even longer afterwards. So it all paid off because now we're all warmed up. I think that was warm up. So we're bringing our A game here to this commentary, and we have it ready to go. So I think we should just jump right into it if you guys are ready.
I'm ready. Let's do it. Is there something wrong with my body? There's something going on with my stuff.
Enough.
No, good. I think all four of us are recording something right now to ensure that this quality entertainment reaches our listeners. We had a pretty good dress rehearsal, but now that you're with us, Jason, I think that with the four of us, it's going to rock. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Oh, thanks. Okay. All right, so, Jim, how do we get her started here?
All right. Well, by now, everyone should have their Blu-ray copy of Star Wars Episode III: Revenge of the Sith in their player, and it should be ready to go. You should be seeing the menu screen right now, and you might want to even take a second to go to setup and click on the subtitles and hit the English for the deaf or hard of hearing, because then you can actually read the dialogue while you're listening to us give our commentary about what's happening on the screen. So that's how I'm going to do it, because we have the volume turned down, and that's how you have to have it. So we have the screen up. We're seeing various images from the film show up. Everyone in sync with me right now?
Yes, I'm looking at the burning Jedi temple right now.
Okay, very
good.
Spoiler
alert.
Ooh, oh, yes. Don't jump ahead, please.
Oh, Jesus.
So what we're going to do is, on the count of three, we're going to count down 3, 2, 1, and I'm going to say punch it. And when I say punch it, you hit that play button, and everyone's Blu-ray will start at the same time, and we'll be in sync, like Justin Timberlake.
That's right.
All right. So are we ready to do this?
All right, I'll be JC.
Okay, prepare yourself.
Let's do it.
All right, Joey. All right. And 3, 2, 1, punch it. Okay.
Now, of course, we all have different load times on our machines.
Yes, right? Yes, that is the fear. That is the fear. I used to do it a different way, which many people said was quite convoluted. But I think,
really?
I had everyone go to the 20th Century Fox screen and then hit pause and then hit skip so it would zero out the counter. And everyone, when they hit play at the same time, it would just start because it was already loaded. But that confused the masses. So I've simplified it considerably. Okay. Yes.
I like this simpler version.
Simple is good. All right.
Yeah.
We're looking at the warning, the PG-13 rating.
By the way, the only Star Wars film to have a PG-13 rating so far.
Due to language and nudity. No,
is
I think
it said?
No, no. I think it was primarily due to the immolation scene, which is quite gory.
I guess in a way he was nude and that his clothes were burned off.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we do get topless Anakin in this film.
That's right.
Oh, yeah, right. But he's not all tatted up like he is when he's doing the last time we saw him.
In the micro series.
Yeah, that's right.
Series.
Yeah.
Bunch of slugs tattooed him.
Hell yeah. Episode 3. You know, seeing that, I got to confess, I was so depressed in the theater when I saw this crawler. It's like, this is it. Last one. George was through. I'm done.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this was... it's... David, what do you think? Do you think he was really done? Or, I mean, this whole notion that he had stories for 7, 8, and 9, that's all kind of coming to light now. Was he done? Was he taking time off? Was he covering his bases? Because this opening battle seems to indicate that this is maybe the last time we're going to have a space battle. I mean, there's so much in it that it seems like he's, you know, he's going out with a blaze of glory. What do you think?
He was done. I mean, there's definitely enough evidence that there were 9, sometimes, you know, 12 films, depending on the interview that you saw. But at this point, I mean, this was the end of a decade plus of making prequels. So I don't blame the guy for wanting to be done. But, you know, maybe he really meant it when he said it, you know, and certainly the prequels had, look at this shot here with the Star Destroyer. This is just amazing with the drums beating, boom,
yes,
boom.
Yes, the war drums.
Was a huge surprise at the time. And then in come the Jedi Starfighters, you know.
I noticed, David, that those drums are noticeably absent from the soundtrack release. So chew on that.
Yeah, they are absent. Yeah, it's totally different. It was like it was edited. It was totally edited in a different way. I don't know before or after, but yeah, you don't have that on the soundtrack release. The soundtrack release in general is pretty small compared to episode 1 and, of course, the classic trilogy, which is too bad because there's amazing music in this movie.
Mm. It's the first time we're really seeing a starfight from above, and you see how it's all layered. You don't really get that with even the Return of the Jedi final battle over the Death Star 2. You're seeing a wall of Imperial ships, but you're not flying through it and up and down through these different levels of battle that are happening. It really gives a three-dimensional feel to it.
Yeah. It's it's certainly an interesting way to, I mean, this is basically the climax of the Clone Wars that we're seeing right here. And if you've seen the series, you know, this is it. This is how the Clone Wars ends, with this gigantic battle over Coruscant. You know, some other stuff happens, but that's basically cleanup. I mean, Count Dooku does not survive this battle.
Multiple Tem Morrisons. So, that's, you know, right. You know, that's a party in a ship right there. You know, just one Tem Morrison.
Just a bunch of Tem Morrisons in a ship. Collins needs to do it for me. He's getting a drink or something like that. But he doesn't. Fantastic Tem Morrison. What do you think? Do you feel like these frames are too cluttered, or do you think this is just about right for the last space battle we're going to see in a long time?
I think it's fitting. You know, when you see a fireworks show, you get bombarded with a ton of fireworks, so many so your brain cannot even comprehend what it's seeing at the time. You're just getting overwhelmed. It's called shock and awe. And when you're when you're saying goodbye, essentially, to the space battles that made the Star Wars franchise so famous in the first place, you know, obviously he brought his game up to a whole new level as far as the special effects go. And it really is a fitting finale, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's the first time that you see a space battle kick off a movie like this. You know, it's just like, let's just give it to you right at the very beginning.
True.
And you just jump right into it, and it's a really exciting, very exciting opening here. Oh, and then...
I do also like that this shows the scale of the Clone Wars as opposed to the Galactic Civil War from the original trilogy, that, you know, the Rebel Alliance's entire fleet could fit into a small corner of this battlefield, whereas the Republic and the Separatist forces were far more vast. I mean, the Empire had these types of forces to send against the Rebellion, but they also were policing the galaxy. But it's just, it's fascinating. It's like we've never seen this many ships in one engagement.
Something that drives me crazy about Jedi flying starships is they don't wear flight suits like we see every pilot do in Star Wars. But I think
it's the same thing that allows them to survive falls from high distances, or to leap up and to make their bodies do things that are otherwise impossible. Their bodies can also withstand the G-forces and all that. That's always how I took it, that the Jedi were so tough that they didn't, you know, the Force protected them and they didn't need those flight suits.
I get that. But don't you think that that would be kind of distracting while they're trying to fight in space? You also have to concentrate on just the simple nature of doing what they're doing. It just seems like they're using their Force abilities. They're stretching themselves too thin when all they have to do is wear a flight suit and a helmet.
Well, it doesn't end well for them, so maybe it is stretching themselves out a little bit too much.
Ah, yes, a prime example of the arrogance of the Jedi on display.
Or just a bad budgetary decision.
Yeah, we could save some money. They didn't have the budget.
You know, that was Mace Windu that put the stops to that.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's the bean counter. You can just tell.
Yeah.
I think it's a costuming choice, personally. I think it's, you know, well, if we have him in a flight suit, then he has to be in that flight suit the entire time he's on Kamino in episode 2.
So, oh.
You know what I mean? Like, there's just like, we want Jedi to look like Jedi.
And, well, you could always show.
You got to have those robes, you know. I don't think we've ever really seen Jedi wear anything other than those robes until, like, the Clone Wars, when you saw Kenobi in stormtrooper armor. It was always the robes. You didn't see Jedi in any other costume. I don't know. Maybe it's a religious choice, you know. By the way, this scene where they jump out of the Jedi starfighter in the hangar. Are you guys there yet?
Sorry, go ahead, dude.
When R2 jumped out, I remember, you know, at Celebration 3, we were working on Episode 3 of the video game at the time, and we actually had that scene, that footage in the game. And I remember demoing it on the stage and there being this huge crowd and people cheering. This was a month before the movie came out, and people cheering when R2 jumped out that way. And it was just such a great moment, you know, where you're just constantly being surprised by R2 in the prequel trilogy.
What I like about R2 jumping out is that it shows that he also has been, he's kind of the droid hero of
he knows
this,
the drill too.
You know, like, what's that?
It's like he's the droid hero. He's been here for a while.
Mm.
He knows the drill with Anakin, right? Me too. I'm going to jump out too. I'm a hero too.
That's right. It also shows they've all been fighting this war for a while, that this is no longer as big a deal, taking down a hangar full of battle droids, that they've done this quite a bit.
And the coughing and the wheezing of Grievous here, which I always thought was just kind of a choice to make him more creepy. And then they tried to explain it in the Gendy series about why. Doesn't he take like a...
Yeah, I like it better as it's just technology that wasn't ready. General Grievous, as we meet him and as we get to know more about him in the Clone Wars series, he's a guy who was addicted to plastic. He's like the chick that's addicted to plastic surgery.
Yes.
He wanted to be faster. He wanted to be as fast as a Jedi, and so he kept augmenting himself, and he just kept going until it was just too much. And now he has health problems.
Well, he's like Michael Jackson?
Yes.
That's right.
Yes. Bruce, he doesn't look at those artificial enhancements as replacements that he needs. He looks at them as improvements. So he is essentially, what I always thought about Grievous was he was just such a dude who was like a perversion of nature. He was removing limbs by, you know, it was an option for him and he took it. Yeah, sure, cut off my leg and replace it with a metal.
Well, there's so little left of him, right? He's basically a
eyes and organs.
A sack of giblets.
Eyes and organs.
Right, yeah. And then the head. By the way, I do think that they really start to get the relationship between Obi-Wan and Anakin here finally. In this whole sequence, this is really the only time, unfortunately, that we really see on screen. I mean, we saw it beautifully in the Clone Wars series, but we get to see on screen the kind of that
chemistry.
The chemistry, exactly, between these two warrior pals. And there's something about this sequence, too, that reminds me a lot of Luke and Han running around on the Death Star in Episode 4.
It's interesting that you bring that up, Jason, because I think this is a movie that is aging very well for a couple of reasons. One, it's just a really strong movie on its own, right? So, I mean, even people that aren't fans of the prequels, it's hard to deny the strength of this movie in general, you know, looking back on it. But also because now the Clone Wars informs so much about watching this movie, you know. It's hard now after, you know, many seasons of the Clone Wars not to think about all those moments and then sort of place all of that story into this viewing. But you got to remember, people have to remember, if you didn't see it in theaters in 2005, if you weren't a Star Wars fan or maybe are too young or something like that, we didn't know who General Grievous was. He just showed up. Just started talking.
He was like a non sequitur. You're just like,
yeah, with a total non sequitur. You're like, who is this? I mean, and the last time that these two faced Dooku, for example, was in Episode 2.
That's right.
And so it's like, we're going to do it together this time. I was just about to say that. It's like, you know, that scene that's coming up, I think worked really, really well. In fact, I did find it slightly regrettable when Anakin and Dooku faced off in the Clone Wars movie, because I loved this exchange that, you know, all this tension's built up, and now years later after the war, I'm ready to face this guy again because I'm so much more powerful. The assumption being by us in the audience seeing the movie for the first time that he hadn't seen Dooku since he lost his arm to him on Geonosis and almost killed Obi-Wan. But that's different now. So, you know, it's just a different, you're almost watching the movie in two ways now, I think. You're watching for what it was and for what it is currently in Star Wars with what we know about canon.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. You're right. Well, if we assume a movie canon, that's we're looking at it from one perspective. And the funniest thing you said, David, was he just showed up and started coughing when you're talking about General Grievous. And that makes me think of about 95% of the people who get on the CTA Brown Line every day.
Speaking of Grievous showing up and coughing, I think the expectation we all had when going into the prequels was that we were going to meet the new Darth Vader, and maybe that was going to be Darth Maul. You know, we'd heard there was a character called Darth Maul, and that's the new Darth Vader, and that whatever villains they were going to introduce were going to be with us for three movies. And instead, we get a very brief appearance by Dooku in two movies, and we get General Grievous. And we had the expectation that these villains would last three movies. I don't think Lucas ever did. And I mean, hell, he didn't even have the expectation that Vader would last one movie.
Right.
That you go back to Star Wars and there's a lot of reports that say, hey, could you make a
shot where Vader, instead of blowing up, he flies off and spirals off and off the Death Star. And if you can't do it in time, you're fired. So,
you know, he chose that he thought that Vader was compelling, so he kept him around. And then later was like,
Marsha, hey, I'm in a hotel room. I just made us $1 million. Darth Vader is Luke's father. Spoiler alert.
But it's these things he riffs on him. And so, you know, Grievous was just an episodic villain, really. That's what he was. And then you find out more about him in the Clone Wars.
Well, and what I love about this whole temptation of Anakin sequence is it's just so beautifully juxtaposed to what we see later in Return of the Jedi with Luke.
Yes, yes.
And yeah, the choices that are made. And this is a glimpse of if Luke would have made the other choice. I mean, he even looks a little like Luke, the way they have his hair, what he's wearing. That could have been Vader just laying there headless and Palpatine nonchalantly getting up.
We should talk about what Palpatine's up to here, that this is Palpatine's whole objective. He told Dooku that they were coming. He told Grievous through Dooku. Grievous, who does not know that Palpatine is Sidious. But this is an effort. Dooku has failed his mission. Dooku is supposed to kill Obi-Wan here. And you can see Palpatine going, no, leave him. I'm sure he's not okay. I'm sure he can't, you know, we can't carry him. We don't have time. Because the one of the main objectives of Palpatine in this episode is to separate Anakin from all of his support systems. Jedi Council, the Jedi Knights, but most importantly, Obi-Wan Kenobi. He needs to get him away from Obi-Wan Kenobi. And so you can see that Dooku, you know, this was a big grand test for Anakin, but in the meantime, he needed Obi-Wan Kenobi to be knocked off. And it didn't work. So Palpatine has to figure out later, which, you know, we'll see if he does. He has to figure out how to separate Obi-Wan from Anakin later on in the film. But it's really fun to watch this movie, watching Ian McDiarmid, and try to figure out what is Palpatine's plan, and how does it go wrong and how does it go right. And generally, things kind of don't always go the way he wants them to, but he's able to improvise.
Yeah. And is he not the most patient villain of any? Yeah.
Yes.
Of any story, because you know, about
playing a long game.
Oh.
Man.
Talk about someone playing the long game. Yeah, I mean, this guy has been plotting and plotting. And talk about improvising when things don't exactly go right and just keeping your eye on the prize, you know. But, yeah, slowly, systematically, he wins throughout this movie. And what a terrifying sequence. And I remember there being a lot of controversy when this movie came out because it was PG-13. Mm-hmm. Not real controversy like in the public, but, you know, a lot of talk online. Like, oh, my gosh, there's a Star Wars movie that's going to be PG-13. Never had one of those before. And that beheading sequence definitely justifies it, because that is about as brutal as a thing we've ever seen in Star Wars.
Right.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
You know, well, it's an execution.
It's done so casually. Yeah, it's a cold-blooded execution, and then the body slumps on the floor, you know.
The head rolls.
That was a lot of the talk in media when this film was released. Is it okay to take my children to see it with the PG-13 rating? And, you know, the way I would always describe it to people is, well, you know, it's comic book violence. And you might consider, of course, the end scene with Anakin to be a little gory. But they don't dwell on it. And that's the strength of this film, as far as it's still maintaining its family entertainment edge, is the fact it doesn't dwell on anything gory or the beheading. You don't see the head, really. It's there. You understand it. But they don't really point the camera at it and just dwell on it for that long. And as far as Palpatine being a patient villain, you see, once he finally gets everything together and grows comfortable in his power, by the time of Return of the Jedi, he has dropped all pretenses. He is not trying to lie to Luke necessarily and present himself as one thing when he's really another. He's not living a double life at that time. He is just full on Emperor. And loving it. And he wants you to know that he's evil and he doesn't care. At this point in time, he's still living that double life. So it's everything's a big lie. It's all just everything that Anakin knows is a lie. And that's the thing that makes makes such a big difference between the temptation of Anakin compared to the temptation of Luke.
By the way, for those of you that are listening to the movie with the volume slightly up, you'll notice that a lot of this sequence plays with no music for a very long period of time. There's no music, yeah. Especially this sequence here where they take the lightsabers from Grievous and they start opening up and kicking butt. Originally on the mix stage, this is a story that Matt Wood told me, there was music in this whole sequence. And they omitted it. And George just said, you know, why don't we take it out? We don't need it. Just get rid of it. And so there's very little music, which is interesting because this section is really the fun part of the movie, right? Because mm-hmm. It eventually all goes downhill from here. It's almost like two different movies. And didn't they say, Sam or Jason, didn't they say that the first cut, didn't Rick McCallum went on record saying the first cut of this whole sequence was an hour and a half?
Yes.
Sequence between the beginning to the crash landing. You know, so it's almost like its own movie within a movie. You know, and maybe that's why they took the music out, is to just kind of let it just kind of be more of a prologue as opposed to like the big action that we're supposed to feast on, you know, because that's still yet to come.
Yeah, this is very much like a different episode. It's almost as if, I mean, if you look at the Clone Wars series, the beginning of this film is way more intense, you know, way more the tone of the Clone Wars series for some fun action adventure. Mm-hmm. And then it gets terrifically dark. Like this movie gets, things go horribly wrong. I mean, it was the right call to make a fun adventure and then have it spiral out of control.
For sure.
But it's I remember being in the theater that this, by the time they land on Coruscant, you're almost exhausted. Like you really did need some time to catch your breath and not have such intense imagery happening.
You really see the goofiness of the battle droids here more so than you had in the previous two films. Something that was really exploited in the Clone Wars TV show. Just how goofy the battle droids were.
Right. Right. Cheap combat automaton. That's the fun thing about what ends up happening is that you start out in a universe where there are battle droids, but they're just not that good. And so Palpatine and others conceive of organic droids, essentially clones, men that are manufactured for warfare. And then by the time of the original trilogy, he's kind of turned most of the galaxy into that war machine that he's been looking for, and that he has recruits and he has fully human crews that are now these, you know, essentially no better than mechanical implements of his will. The Empire is a machine. It's a colorless, humorless, and utterly devoid of diversity. And at this time, you know, there was still some diversity. There was still some color left in the universe. And Palpatine is slowly but surely wringing all the life out of this Republic, and until it is this mechanical husk that he feels the most secure in. But so the battle droids, yeah, those things are already obsolete by the time you see the end of this war.
That's,
you can even argue with the Grievous's bodyguards, right?
Yeah. I mean,
and that they were becoming obsolete in the Clone Wars too. Yeah. When you look at like the assassin droids and the, you know, they were kind of like 1.0. You know, it's like having your first iPhone. There's no Siri. There's no anything.
There's no Siri.
It's ridiculous. There's no Siri. You know.
Right.
Yeah, it's just terrible. So why don't we try and do this a little bit better?
Yeah. Let's use real people.
Yeah, let's use real people. Oh, we'll put them on the other side. I remember being so confused. I remember I was working on a game called Jedi Starfighter, and I remember reading the script for episode 2, and the moment of, oh, I can't believe that I was like, wait a minute, I don't understand. So Palpatine is behind the Separatists, right? Yes, but he's also behind the, oh, I see, he's fabricating a war. Oh my God, this is like the most villainous thing you could possibly do. He is literally fabricating a war. He's putting, you know, it's all chess pieces to him. He creates a conflict in order to gain power, and everything in these movies is a lie. I mean, the dark side is shrouded everything. They can't see the truth. You know, it's this huge lie. I mean, conspiracy theorists must love this movie, you know, because that's basically what the story of Star Wars is. It is a giant conspiracy, and when the conspiracy is revealed, he he actually says, I'm not the conspiracy. You're the conspiracy. The Jedi.
Yes.
That's exactly what happens, right?
Yes.
So he's like, you're right. There is a conspiracy, and it's you. Why? Because I'm the chancellor, and I say so. And by the way, you f***ed up my face, so I'm going to play the sympathy card. I can't believe I just F-bombed.
Mark the time.
It's a PG-13 and is now R. It's an R-rated Star Wars film.
Okay. Sorry, everybody. And here's the first cameo.
By the way.
Katie Lucas, or no, Amanda Lucas. Or
Katie
both.
And Amanda Lucas.
Yeah, they're both right there. King Jar Jar.
By the way, just not to throw anyone under the bus, but David, do you remember, and I'm not going to go further than this, but there was a company working with LucasArts making, or at least trying to make a video game franchise, and they had all kinds of swear words in some of their cutscenes, and LucasArts had to say, no, please, please tell the Stormtroopers to stop swearing.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? It's a company... I'm not saying who,
exactly you're talking
but it's
about.
A company that that closed its doors and pretended like their game was done when it wasn't, and threw out a bunch of concept art and a bunch of video gameplay stuff, and it was all smoke and mirrors. And you know, yeah, screw those guys.
There were some tonal issues.
There were some tonal issues. Yeah, it's funny. They don't. They like. Oh, we almost had a name of game here. It's finished, and it was almost finished. It's like, first of all, it wasn't. Wasn't running on actual hardware, and secondly, why were your stormtroopers swearing? Just cut it out. Stop it.
I don't know if that was. I don't remember. I don't think. I can't remember if they were swearing. Well, yeah, we. Mm. Well, yeah.
Well, I think in some of the cutscenes they had to be. It had to be edited. Maybe I'm wrong here. I'm glad I'm not saying any names.
I just tonally there were some issues. Yeah, I mean that's the thing about the Star Wars franchise in general. There are so many licensees and so many people that you know that are just so hungry to work on it, you know, and you once said, you know, on the comlink, you said, you know, everyone thinks they know Star Wars, and to an extent, everyone's right, you know, because everyone kind of brings their own expectation to Star Wars, you know, and to every movie, because Star Wars is so vast and it means so much to so many different people. Oh, this is a great scene here. You know, I actually really like this first time you see these two, Anakin and Padme, and they just, you know, they just embrace, and like I don't know. It's like I feel like their storyline really works in Revenge of the Sith in a way that wasn't entirely successful for me anyway in Attack of the Clones.
Yeah, I agree.
But
this is pretty complicated scene to find out all these pieces of information, and I dare say the reactions for both of the actors here are quite good.
But for an audience member watching this, it's hard to digest everything she's saying because you're so overwhelmed to see her wearing the Star Puffs hairstyle.
I love that she's wearing that.
Yes.
I think that this movie obviously has more homage paid to the original films than the other two, I think, combined. It's everywhere you look, they're harkening back to the originals. But you know what? When you think about the Clone Wars... I don't want to be cynical or anything, but it seemed like they were always hanging on each other. I never knew that they were apart that much.
Yeah.
And now, you know, I mean, it just felt like they were always, you know, that he was always on Coruscant or somewhere nearby. And but here you get the sense that he's been gone for a good long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's been out on the front. He's been, you know, tempted at various ports of call by Twi'lek babes. And he has stayed true.
He's a sailor. He's basically a sailor in a time of war, and you have to understand, he gets lonely.
Yes.
He's out there by himself. And so he saved it all for Padme. So great to see her. And then she drops the bomb on him. She's preggers.
I know. Yeah. What kind of crap is that, right? Like, Padme, keep it to yourself.
Yeah, you know what I mean? like he needs that right now. Okay.
I love, like, this completely male, like, oh, come on, lady, keep it to yourself. I'm not trying to hear that.
I just got here. Take me to dinner first.
Yeah.
Take me to dinner and then tell me. Actually, don't even tell me you're pregnant. You know,
just get home so I'm not having to react on my face.
So here you have the Separatist Council, and Grievous just blows right past them. Now, what's wonderful about that is that there is no leadership now. Grievous is the de facto military leader at this point. The Separatist Council is all waiting to hear, what do we do? And he just blows right past them. Because
Sidious is calling.
This is true, but I would imagine part of, in large part, the Separatist War Council probably doesn't know who Sidious is. We know that Newt Gunray does, but the rest of them probably don't.
That's a good point, Sam, because their leader, or who they thought was their leader, is dead. Yep. And Grievous hears Sidious say the end of the war is near. So it makes me wonder if Grievous knows a little bit more than the Separatist Council does.
Well, the thing is you have the Separatist Parliament, right? And the Separatist Parliament don't know anything about a General Grievous or half the stuff that happens in the war. They look at Dooku as a statesman, as a politician, a diplomat, and a leader, and they also know he's their military leader, kind of their commander in chief.
He's George Washington.
He is George Washington. He's literally George Washington. He's the same guy. I guess he's not literally. Literally means he is George Washington, and they're in fact different people. But
right.
I digress.
Let it not be said that Sam Witwer believes
that Dooku and George Washington, you never saw them at a party together. It's the same guy.
That's right.
It's the same guy.
They both powder their hair.
The Parliament does not know anything about General Grievous, and General Grievous is people are on different levels of this conspiracy. Grievous knows there's a Darth Sidious and that we take orders from him. He probably doesn't know much more than that. Newt Gunray knows that Darth Sidious exists and has dealt with him, was betrayed by him once, and then got roped right back in. I would imagine most of the Separatist War Council doesn't even know a damn thing about him. They do. They do, because they get a message from him later, don't they? So I guess the Separatist War Council knows. The Separatist War Council is different than their parliament. Their parliament is like their Senate. The Separatist War Council are like the most wealthy families. They're the Illuminati of the Separatists. Mm-hmm. So there's just conspiracies within conspiracies when it comes to how all this stuff works.
Yeah, I always assume that Newt Gunray and the Nemoidians, at least, they had a relationship with Sidious that soured.
Yeah.
He essentially bailed on them at the end, and they went to court and whatever else. They were tried four times, I believe, C.O. Bibble informs us, in Attack of the Clones. But I always thought that the Separatists were not in league with Darth Sidious during the time of the Clone Wars and this film. I wonder when that line gets crossed, when Sidious gets reintroduced into Newt Gunray's life. Oh, he's back again.
We have it on Dooku's word that Newt Gunray was betrayed and went for help. We don't really know what happened, because ultimately at the end of this film we see that Sidious and Newt Gunray seem to be working together.
Yeah.
So, there's those kind of details are not ultimately as important, other than the fact that just illustrating that no one knows who's really pulling what string, and it's just a confusing, terrifying mess of conspiracies.
Yeah, it is.
All
Dooku.
Of them. Yeah.
Dooku.
Can we
reveals,
talk about this? Sorry.
I just want to wrap this up. Dooku does reveal to Obi-Wan in Attack of the Clones that
tells him what's up.
He says Sidious betrayed Newt Gunray, and that's how Gunray was looking at it. And he went to Dooku for some sort of support then, after being betrayed by the Dark Lord. So. Let's talk about this.
Already working with Sidious at that point.
There you go. Yeah.
This scene here, where she's out on the balcony brushing her hair, and then of course he has the dream, and now they're talking on the balcony again in the middle of the night. The first time I saw this, I feel like that's the only one scene where you just kind of, where it gets a little cheesy. There's this, I'm so in love with you. No, you don't get it, man. I'm so in love with you.
No, you hang up.
Well, that's exactly it. So the first time I saw this movie was actually at ILM months before. I think this was actually 2004, end of 2004. And there was an assistant pulling stuff up on a spreadsheet going, okay, so now I need to show you scene 70. No, not 73, 70, 60. Anyway, let me bring this up. And so we were just watching it scene by scene, you know, just to see what was going. And he pulled this scene up, you know, the original cut of it. And they say that line, "I'm in love with you." "No, it's because I'm so in love with you." And one of my coworkers at the time, Will Beckman, you know, it's just kind of quiet in the room after the scene's over. And he's pulling up the next one and he just goes, "No, you're Schmoopy. No, you're Schmoopy." The whole room just laughs, you know, because it is kind of, it's so like, I mean, I get it. You know, it's actually kind of, it turns into a really nice scene. You know, he has the dream and it becomes a very important scene. And that's his sort of his first turning point, is like the seed of fear has been planted in Anakin. And now you have the scene between Anakin and Yoda. And
Yoda totally blows this, by the way. Mm-hmm. Yoda absolutely blows this moment with Anakin. Anakin is coming to him with his heart in his hand, and Yoda's like, "Yeah, you just can't get attached.
You're fine. You're fine. Leave it alone.
Yeah, you're fine. Don't worry about it. You got to get over this." And I love the light. I mean, the lighting in here is far, you know, with the blinds and just going for the kind of Spielbergian eye lighting, you know, when talking about it, which is in its own way kind of dark and foreboding. Like, Yoda doesn't seem like his bright, cheery self. It's just a very disturbing scene. And I love that you go into this room here where Obi-Wan's clearly been in like a war council meeting, you know, a strategy meeting, and he's talking about Boss Pity and all these other things. And you're like, "Oh, I want to see all of that. When do we get to see that?" Oh, you know, just like, again, giving you
more. They're just powering down.
Yeah. Wait.
We just miss it.
more battle. Less talkie. More battle. But no, this is actually a really great, scene.
You just missed it. We were talking about the most exciting battle ever of the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah, this is, and actually, it's funny because after the opening battle, this is one of the longest sections in Star Wars movies without any action in it. From the end of that battle until you got a little bit on Kashyyyk, but I mean, there's just a lot of plot development going on.
Oh, it's long.
It is very long. Yeah, but it doesn't feel long, you know? It actually, because the plot is moving very quickly in a lot of ways, and so now you're back here with this shot coming up here. I love the red in Palpatine's office. And you see the light fixtures on the wall there? They always look like droid starfighters to me. I always thought that was such a, you know, a dead giveaway.
Oh, my gosh.
Look at the droid starfighter on the wall. That's just all I see when I see this movie, is like, this guy's clearly working with the Separatists. He's got droid starfighter light fixtures that he probably, you know, they're licensed.
He just likes their, design aesthetic.
Yeah.
He's certainly Anakin, done some
ultra droid lights. Yes, man.
I like the when you see them in silhouette and the way they have, you know, the cut of Anakin's robes are very Vader like, and they do like here when you see them in silhouette, it's so Vader and Palpatine walking with each other. I
like how his interior decoration changes the closer he gets to his plot being fulfilled. You know, I feel that the end of the war is coming, so let's redo this whole room in red.
Yeah, he's getting a little more bold.
Yeah, exactly.
As things go along, he's getting a little full of himself.
Exactly.
He's already starting to plant the seeds that will alienate Anakin from the rest of the Jedi.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this part right here. Yeah, Sam, absolutely.
Now, this is, I wish Anakin had defended himself a little bit better. I think some audience members were like, "Oh, why is he so mad that he's not made a Jedi Master?" And I wish Anakin had spoken up, where he would have said, "Guys, I basically won the war for you. I defeated not only their president, but their war minister and best warrior. I just took them out. I saved our president, and I basically cut the head off, literally and figuratively, the leadership of the Separatists. And no one's letting him sit on the Jedi Council. This guy can, this guy can run this war.
Exactly.
And he can win it for them if they only let him." So I wish that he had an opportunity to be more specific as to why he was so upset with them and so disappointed with their decision.
Well, there is an absolute
situation. He has a lot of reason to be irritated, you know, when you're kind of the star player and they're putting you on the bench, and even the president of the galaxy is saying, "Guys, this guy's kind of the best you got. Can we get him on the council?"
But that's like, issue, right? I mean, yeah, that's the issue, is that the Palpatine knowingly committed a faux pas in terms of the Jedi Order by ordering the Jedi to put him on the council. And it's like, whoa, this is...
He knew they would say no. He knew that
Exactly. And they also know that Anakin is too close to Palpatine to explain to him the nuances of this faux pas. Because you can also argue that, yeah, Anakin was so in shock he didn't actually defend himself. Well, the Jedi Council also did not do a very good job of explaining. Obi-Wan's trying to explain in this scene here, but then to make matters worse, he has to give him a new assignment, which is to spy on him. You know, and it's just this really sort of weird. You know, now he's got the Jedi. He's alienated from the Jedi, and now he's starting to have this different ideology from Obi-Wan. This scene here, where he's like, the council wants you to report on all of the Chancellor's dealings. It's like, oh my God, where do I go? I have no place to go. You know, I can't go to Palpatine now because I'm supposed to, you know, he's been caught in the middle of the Jedi. You said this earlier, Sam, that he's slowly and systematically being isolated from his entire support system after coming back from a very long war, you know, and all he has left at this point is Padme, which creates his fear of her death. It amplifies that even more. And of course, in the next scene, when you get to it and they start having, you know, conversations about whether or not, you know, they're fighting on the right side, Anakin starts to feel alienated intellectually from his wife. So he's just completely alienated to the point where the only person he has to turn to is Palpatine.
Is Palpatine. Yeah.
Yeah. It's fascinating systematic alienation of this incredibly powerful.
Well, it's kind of like what jerk boyfriends do, you know? They kind of
isolate their girlfriends from their friends. That's what they make sure the girl is. Girls do this too. Like you make sure if you're a dick, you isolate your partner from all their friends and their support systems so that they have no perspective. And the only person they're going to for perspective is you. And because you are manipulating them, that makes it easier for you to do that.
Yeah, it works every time, guys.
Works every time. Code 45. You know, so
he says, yeah, prophecy that misread could have been. It was misinterpreted, but it was not misread. He is the chosen one.
Is the chosen one. Is this really a test? I mean, do they really hope that they're going to get something good out of Anakin, or is this really a test of his loyalty? Where does his loyalty?
Very good question. Right. You know,
they're improvising. Yeah.
They're putting him in a.
They're putting him in a tough situation. Yeah. Yeah.
He is likely. They know it's very. They know that it's very possible he will fail this test. But you know, yeah, they're. They're juggling a lot at this point. They're in the middle of a war, and there's some, you know, there's some political questions because they can see the end of it at this point.
Now, did you guys David, you had a ringside seat to a lot of this, so you didn't have, I don't think, a whole lot of time and room to speculate. But I remember as this film was ramping up, I thought that they were leading toward a love triangle between Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Padme. In fact, in the novelization, there's even a scene where Anakin picks up a mirror or something and he gets a feeling that Obi-Wan had been there and he's very suspicious of it. Did you guys ever think that they were going in that direction? Or
well, I did. After seeing The Phantom Menace, I felt like eventually that's where it would lead. Where it would be some sort of love triangle, but it didn't really shake out that way.
There were early scripts and early treatments that had stuff that would have led to a love triangle, but I guess they decided to shy away from that. Which, if you're trying to portray a monastic order that can't get married, I guess you can't really have Obi-Wan macking on your wife.
No.
Now, this is a thrilling scene.
Oh, wait a minute. Paul Bateman cameo coming up here. Right?
Is that right?
Where's Paul? Paul is...
There's a Pablo cameo. There's a George cameo.
Oh, there he is. He's like kind of in the background there. You see him on the stairway.
There's George and the whole thing. But Paul is Mina Tills. There he is, right there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, that was him. That was Paul Bateman.
This is one of my favorite scenes in Star Wars ever. I remember seeing this, you know, back to that screening that I mentioned where they were just pulling, you know, shots up on an Avid and watching a rough cut of this. And by the way, thinking, oh, they're at a Mon Calamari ballet. Ooh, I can't wait to hear that. You know, and then actually I remember hearing it and going, oh, well, it's actually kind of underwhelming. But then now I realize that it would have been too distracting to make it anything more than what it was. But I just can't remember thinking, a Mon Calamari ballet, you know, because when I first saw the scene, there was no visual effects. It was just them talking. But the dialogue that is revealed, you know, and Darth Plagueis being interviewed, you know, revealed, and the fact that Palpatine is able to be the only person in all of Anakin's life to put his anxiety at ease by basically saying, no, you can trust me because I know what's going on anyway. They want you to spy on me, don't they? Yes, they do. That confession has to feel so good for Anakin because he's holding all this in himself. In the previous scene, you know, like I mentioned before, Padme is basically starting to question everything that Anakin's been fighting for and has put his life at risk for.
God, it's not a good thing to hear from your wife.
And so who can he turn to? Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's not a good thing to hear from your support system, right?
No, when you're, yeah, Jedi when you're.
Shame me. Yeah.
Yeah, and Anakin is, he's seen a lot of friends die. He's been through the ringer, and he's not really getting rewarded morally or otherwise for his hard work in defending the peace. He's just getting beat up on it. And when you watch the Clone Wars series, he does. By the end of that series, he has been demoralized quite a bit. But things are just kind of getting worse for the guy. By the way, I watch, you know, the whole Leave Us, that whole thing. I really wonder who those guys are that Palpatine's working with. You know, there's that woman.
The bald chick.
Yeah, they react. And also, who's the guy? The older, that guy.
Masameda.
Masameda. They react so quickly that you really feel as if they're in deep thrall to this guy, that they are in some way, their will is enslaved by Palpatine. The closer in, you know that there's hints that these people have inklings of the true conspiracy, but probably only pieces of it.
Right.
So he's already building this very, almost this occult secret order around him with the, you know, the Royal Guard and all that.
Yes.
But anyway, but talking about this scene, it really is one of the best scenes in all Star Wars because it goes to the heart of what the entire conflict in all of Star Wars is really about. That Anakin is saying, no, the Jedi are all about let come what may and don't interfere too much and just accept life for what it gives you and be philosophical about it. And then this guy's saying, yeah, but if you have the ability to intervene and save people, why wouldn't you do that? Right. Why couldn't you do that?
Yeah.
And he's like, well, yeah, but the Sith are all about their passion. And he goes, yeah, well, the Jedi aren't enough about their passion. You know, they're too passive and too dogmatic. And both of these, the scary thing about the scene is that both of these men are right. And the problem is Anakin is, you know, he's talking about what the Jedi are, but he's not nearly as conflicted as he should be. And in the case of this particular debate, the Jedi actually happen to be right, that if Anakin had just chilled out, his wife probably would have lived.
Well, and this is another sign of Palpatine's brilliance here, right? Talk about vertical integration, right? The guy is once again creating the problem, which is Anakin's fear, and now offering a solution to him, right? He's basically, he has used the dark side to plant this fear and is basically offering the dark side to overcome it, you know? He's just a snake oil salesman, you know? It's just that a total sociopath, you know? And, just complete his manipulation of Anakin is so complete because Anakin at this point has no choice but to be hanging on his every word. He feels like he doesn't have friends. He's a little bit estranged from his wife. He, you know, his feelings are hurt, you know, in terms of like, he feels totally insulted. And here's this guy that's been building him up now for years and is now, seemingly without knowing it, talking to Anakin about Anakin's deepest, most private fears, which he's having dreams about, you know. Oh, and then you cut to Kashyyyk, and this took my breath away when I saw these, you know, these cancel wings and these helicopters and all that kind of stuff on the shores of Kashyyyk. And how interesting that they're on a beach because, you know, all we had to go on was the holiday special And we thought that they lived in these giant Rorschach trees or whatever they were, you know, the giant trees hundreds and hundreds of feet above the surface was what Kashyyyk was from a canon perspective for years before Revenge of the Sith came out.
Yeah, little did we know they were all just kicking it on a beach. Yeah. It's like Wookiee
beach party.
Yeah, Wookiee Club Med.
So they've here's something interesting. They've located General Grievous. He's on Utapau, and they realize, okay, well, this is we get him, and they've got nothing. So, and Palpatine, of course, along with this intel, passed along that he wants Anakin to lead the campaign. He does this for one simple reason, because he knows that the Council will say no and send Obi-Wan instead. And what does that give Palpatine? Well, Obi-Wan is out of the picture. Maybe Grievous can kill him, maybe not. Doesn't matter. Just need to get Obi-Wan away from Anakin so he can continue to work on this guy. And so, of course, it works.
This is great, seeing Chewbacca back like this. You know, this was another really big deal for people that remember having Chewbacca in episode 3, you know, and then seeing all these Wookiees. We'd never seen this many Wookiees before. And then this battle starts, this really great battle, and, you know, Captain Tarful and all that kind of stuff. No, that's Tarples. No, who's General Tarful?
Tarful.
Tarples. Tarful. I should know this
General
from
Tarful.
I'm not remembering anything. You know, and these guys all shooting on the beach, and, of course, the Tarzan roar that happens with these Wookiees and the spider droids coming out of the water here.
George loves his Tarzan roar.
He does. Yeah, he does.
Tarzan yell. It's even in the subtitles. Tarzan yell.
We had a whole level in Battlefront 2 about this, you know, that took place on this beach.
Yes.
I remember watching this scene with great interest.
Now, here we are seeing the very last time Anakin and Obi-Wan are together as brothers, as, you know, master and apprentice, or, you know, two fellow.
And it's a peace offering, right? It's
it's not only a peace offering, but what's sad about it is that if Obi-Wan didn't need to go off and fight the war without Anakin, this is the conversation that starts helping Anakin right himself. But they don't have time. And, you know, Anakin's coming and saying, listen, I've been this, I've been that, I don't know, I've been frustrated. But Obi-Wan doesn't have time to talk about it. This is Anakin asking one last time for help, and Obi-Wan misses it because they've got other things to do, and because Palpatine is isolating Anakin. Get Obi-Wan out of the picture, because this conversation can't, you know, if it goes on for more than a minute, Palpatine's, you know, it's possible that Palpatine's hopes for Anakin will be dashed.
I love the shot of the giant, you know, Republic destroyer there.
Here, by the way, this shot, he's finally alone.
Yeah.
He doesn't understand why he feels so, you know, terrible right now, but he's alone. Mm. He is now entirely unsupported. The only support he has is Palpatine, and that support is not real.
And here's Tamara Morrison coming back here, giving a bunch of... I tell you, I'll keep... they're on the far side there of Utapau, and don't look at my scar. I'm self-conscious about it.
And I'm young Tamara, standing back here, a bunch of boys with their assortment of missiles and guys, and everyone's good.
There are too many Tamuras talking at the same time. It's just
that's right.
An army.
Sitting back here, and then maybe there's a Boba back here, played by Daniel Logan.
Quiet,
hey, man. What's up, bro?
No, Daniel. I'm telling you, you got to keep it together, brother.
No, I'm just a young clone. I'm just a young clone.
Quiet, Daniel. I'm tired of listening to your crap. Don't think you grow and you understand things that men have to understand. When you go out into the battlefield, you hit hard, bro.
You got it, brother. You got it. Sortiment of missiles. You got it.
No, I've got it, brother. I've got it, Daniel. You go back into the crib. You go back to the crib for a while and suck on the bottle while the big boys are going to war. Look at Anakin with his PSP here. I always thought that looked like a little Sony PSP or something.
It's an iPad mini.
It is. He was tweeting at that point.
Padme, did you see my iPhone 6?
Hashtag feeling dark.
I didn't get a retweet or even a favorite. Where were you? Were you with Obi-Wan?
You were on Tinder again, weren't you, Padme?
Were you sweeping right, Padme?
You're sweeping
were you
right
swishing your finger?
The conks, Padme.
Okay, and here's another. Anakin is then asking for assistance from his wife, and no one is helping this guy. He's saying, I feel lost and all this stuff, and no one really knows what he's talking about.
Oh, but she's just so worthless in this movie.
Okay, but
her character. Hey, is her
this
character.
Woman is pregnant, by the
oh,
way.
Oh, please.
There you go.
I mean, she's pregnant, and her... You know, and she's like not really recognizing, you know, her husband. I mean, this is.
I bet Leia was pregnant through most of the original trilogy from various men,
from various dudes, and she still got the job done.
Maybe this is what Episode 7 is actually about. It turns out that Anakin wasn't that faithful, and there are younglings all throughout the galaxy that, 50 years later,
he fathered countless Padawans,
Vaders, plural,
illegitimate. Illegitimate Padawans. So here Obi-Wan goes off on to essentially try to finish the war while everything is being undone behind him.
A beautiful model, by the way. This is a model.
That's the thing.
It's a model.
The reason people think there was so much CG in the prequels is, one, it's true. But two, because that was where their press efforts went. They wanted to talk about this new tech. And the fact is, there's tons of models and model work done, practical effects. It's I think we talked about this in a previous podcast, that it really is just the fact that movies look different now than what they looked like back in the 80s. The resolution is much, much higher. And
by the way, it's the Inquisitor back there.
Yeah.
It is. All those Utapals, they have these lines on their face. No, he just slept on a corduroy pillow.
he just woke up. He was sleeping in his office.
Yeah, sleeping in his office, just woke up. There's a Jedi here. What? Get off the corduroy pillow.
Were you napping?
Terrible pillow face.
Were you napping in it? No. I was doing paperwork. I don't know, man. You got that corduroy pillow in your office, don't you? Yes.
I like that his robes are corduroy, too. I mean, they are really committed to that look.
Yeah, they're so...
They're corduroy planet.
I love the steampunk astromech, too. That kind of brassy dome on Obi-Wan's astromech is pretty cool.
That is cool.
He flies. That little droid can fly that ship like nobody's business. There he goes.
Yeah.
He's out of there.
Tell you what. Major fail on the part of the Magna Guards who are watching the ship.
Yeah.
And they just see Obi-Wan just kind of take off outside of the ship.
I don't know. Maybe he went to the bathroom. Did you see him get back on? Yeah, he must have, right? Yeah, he's on.
Right. I don't know about the... I was never really sold on this creature.
Boga?
Yeah.
Boga. I actually really like him. I kind of want one.
Well, I wouldn't mind having one, but
I think I would get sick riding that thing because it's it kind of like jostles you back and forth when it's running. I think I'd probably get motion sick riding the thing.
I think it would be a rough thing to keep in the house. but I just wasn't sure. Okay. I don't know. It didn't. I guess you got dewbacks on a desert planet. Who knows? But. It just seemed a little weird. Like, George was just like, make it a lizard.
You know, it's kind of funny as I watched Grievous address the Separatist Council. I see that walrus man again. I believe his name's Poe Nudo, the Aqualish. What do you guys think of the decision to completely revamp the look of that alien for the prequels?
It is a departure.
Oh, yeah. It's a huge departure from old.
Didn't you notice?
Butt face, as we used to call him. But it seems like that those tusks in front are way more pronounced, and it's just a very different look. They have multiple eyes, which is really weird. They have like four eyes. Strange design.
Well, maybe it's just a different part of Aqua
Lish
is.
Yeah. Aqualicious.
I like that Magna Guard just kind of clawing trying to claw his way out of there.
Now, this could be the end of Obi-Wan here.
Should be the end of Obi-Wan. He's totally surrounded.
Yeah, and so, did he jump down knowing that this was going to play out this way? Because, I mean, he would have been gunned down easily.
Well, I think the idea is keep Grievous busy for the troops to get there. Because he was presumably going to take off with them, right? He was about to, okay, let's go to Mustafar. That's where we're headed.
Yeah, but he could have been just gunned down, you know. But he knew somehow that that Grievous would want to, that Grievous's ego.
Oh, absolutely. It's all about ego. He needed some time to monologue, and he needs to be the one to take Obi-Wan out.
I was so excited the first time I saw this and the spinning saber blades and like, how are you going to choreograph? I remember asking Nick Gillard at Celebration, how do you choreograph a fight with one lightsaber versus four lightsabers? And, you know, and he talked a lot about the spinning thing and then just talking about how he had to systematically remove one lightsaber, then a second lightsaber out of the fight. Just in order, because, you know, the camera cuts are really close up. There's not a lot of choreography that you can follow. You know, now you can, right? You can see the two lightsabers against one. But when there were four of them, you know, it's almost an impossible fight to follow. And so the camera cuts are really close in on them. And it's just a lot of flashing and a lot of, you know, parrying and blocking and things like that. But, you know, to try and choreograph that fight is almost impossible for four lightsabers against one, you know.
And they tried a lot of different things. Didn't they try like a guy on another guy's shoulders and some various things to block the... I thought I remember Gillard talking about that.
A guy and another guy. So he fought Master Blaster.
Yeah.
Essentially. Master Blaster on Bob Town.
Oh, Mad Max.
Yeah, Thunderdome. By the way, I do...
I love this.
The whole thing with Grievous is that no matter how quick his... mechanical reflexes are, there's just no substitute for the Force. There's no substitute for being able to see things just before they happen. So it doesn't matter how fast Grievous is, Obi-Wan will always be a split second ahead of him.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, this sequence with the rollerball Grievous vehicle and the Boga was ghost directed by Steven Spielberg at ILM.
And by the way, that roller car was first seen in an episode of the animated series, the 80s animated series, Droids, weirdly enough.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
That vehicle shows up in the Star Wars universe in the 80s, funny enough.
Well, what goes around comes around, from Kybo Ren to Kylo Ren.
Yeah,
that's right.
It's funny how Droids is like popping up as this source of classic material. It almost makes you want to go back, but you know, I don't even think Droids was released on DVD. It was released on VHS.
There was a one disc or maybe a two disc set of Droids that was on that was released officially on DVD.
Droids and Ewoks
for a short time. Yeah, yeah, they were,
but never the complete series.
They're out of print and they go for a lot of money.
Interesting, because Battle of Endor and Caravan of Courage I just got on eBay, and I had to pay a little bit for that. It was like $25 or $30 or something, because that's,
yeah. That's
and
out of
the
end
print. Series is out of print too.
Yes, you
know, original Clone Wars, which is a shame. I remember actually the Gendy crew talking about how they had to change their whole last episode of season 2 in order to justify the cough, because they had done this whole Grievous episode, but they had to explain, or they did a Grievous episode in season 1, but and then Shaak Ti kept dying and then kept being brought back to life. So they had to keep changing that once they cut Shaak Ti's death, because they were going to kill her in the Clone Wars, you know, micro series. And then they had to keep her alive. It was just this really weird, like, you know, and then we had Shaak Ti again in The Force Unleashed and finally killed her off, although that's not canon anymore. So who knows what's up with Shaak Ti?
Shaak Ti gets killed off in the deleted scenes on the DVD for this film.
But that's what I mean. It's deleted. So it wasn't canon. So we had it in The Force Unleashed because, you know what I mean? It was just kind of this weird, like, it's funny how these movies just, there was this ripple effect on, you know, what people were trying to, what Genny was trying to make in the micro series at the time, because that was in full production simultaneously with this movie. Mm-hmm. And as were video games and all kinds of novels. And, you know, I mean, the whole, you brought up the monastic order, Sam. That wasn't introduced until episode 2. We didn't know that Jedi couldn't, you know, marry, love, and have families. That was a new thing. That was a prequel thing.
Right.
You
know, yeah.
And if you read Pablo Hidalgo's book, which really summarizes the sort of expanded universe novels, you know, it has little blurbs about each and every one. He actually mentions that, you know, episode 1 novels suddenly became sort of out of canon and inaccurate once episode 2 happened, because suddenly, you know, the nature of the Jedi Order had changed. You know, that George was actively creating this canon, you know, in parallel to everyone else trying to sort of keep up and trying to stay in canon, but it's very difficult. You know, I mean, this is a movie franchise. It really is a film franchise, and you have to be at the epicenter of it, you know, making these movies, because those really do set the tone, and everything else kind of trickles down from there.
Here's a pretty important moment in the film.
Yeah, it is. This is when Palpatine reveals himself to Anakin, and challenging him in a way that he wouldn't need to challenge the public.
It's very bold.
Basically, he's revealing to Anakin that he's the Sith Lord, but challenging whether that really makes a difference. Challenging Anakin with, what does that really mean to you, kid? And the thing we have to remember about the Sith is, and we'll talk more about this later, but the public does not know the Sith. The Sith were around 1,000 years ago, causing major problems. Since then, they'd faded into boogeyman status, and then after that, really just an obscure religion that the Jedi had a problem with. But the average citizen doesn't know the Sith. I mean, if you watch the Clone Wars, there's a lot of, you know, Darth Maul or someone will run around with a red lightsaber, and the public will say, oh, yeah, there is a rogue Jedi running around. And they're like, no, not Jedi, Sith. And they're like, okay, whatever. Anyway, so he's, you know, like, it's all the same to the public. So let's remember that the only people that the word Sith has any meaning to are the Jedi. And I'll go into that later, as there's a scene coming up where the what's at stake is a lot different than what people thought when they first saw this movie. There's some insights that I had in conversations with Dave Filoni about the Sith and the nature of the Sith and all that stuff as far as the public are concerned. Mm. But right now he's presenting his, you know, you've always heard that this is bad and, you know, the Sith are bad. What if that's not true? And are the Jedi doing you any favors right now? You know, they're leading a slave army, and they've lied to you in the past, and they've been manipulative, and they've asked you to spy on me, the duly elected Chancellor of the Republic. So it's, you know, he's challenging the core morality that Anakin was raised with. But the thing is, he's around the right age for that, too. There are times when people can be challenged on that stuff. If that stuff hasn't proven out to be useful for them or to, you know, or to have value. And right now, Anakin's core beliefs are not holding a lot of value.
Especially if it's emotionally convenient to believe Palpatine, because
precisely, yes,
promised certain, you know, promised to give the ability to save what inevitably must be true, because he's having visions of it in his dreams, the death, you know, save his wife from death during labor, right?
Yeah.
And
the last time he had visions, his mother died. So this is a certainty to Anakin. This is not, this might happen. It's, to Anakin, this will happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Anakin wants to do the right thing, but at the same time, you know, and coming up in this, there's an incredible sequence. Well, we'll talk about it, you know, as it comes up. But yeah, I mean, him having to make that decision is incredibly painful, you know. Mm. This is a great moment here, you know, when he finally grabs the blaster and shoots Dooku.
Yeah, oh, Grievous.
Oh, Grievous. Thank yes. you. Yeah.
Yeah. The most Anakin. Unlikely Star Wars action figure ever created was an action figure of that. The death of Grievous.
I forgot about that. Yeah. That's right. With the flames shooting out of his orifices.
Yes. Kind of a one-trick pony, that action figure is.
Yeah, that's for diorama building.
Yeah,
for
yeah.
Sure.
You don't grab a Hasbro TIE fighter and say, boy, I'm gonna have Death of Grievous fly this into action. It really doesn't work that way.
Doug, I don't think those pieces came out. This is, you know, Mace Windu at his best here. I don't know how they got such an understated performance out of Samuel Jackson.
I actually thought I wanted a bigger reaction.
So did I.
Oh, absolutely.
I wanted suddenly the entire council, I wanted everyone to jump, because this small reaction by Mace Windu, and maybe it's because he doesn't quite trust Anakin, mm-hmm. but it's what dooms Mace Windu, right? Yes. If Mace Windu took more than Kit Fisto and was it Saucy Tin? No, he doesn't take Saucy Tin. He takes Kit Fisto and what's the other Jedi?
He does take Saucy Tin.
Yeah,
he takes those two
and Kit Fisto,
and they all die. You know, as opposed to, well, now let's talk about this, and now let's take basically the entire Jedi Council and, you know, an entire legion of troops to the Senate chamber and arrest him, if this is really true.
But that's the thing. No, he can't. There's a reason. This is what I said we're going to talk about later.
Oh,
There's
he has to do it undercover, right? He has to do
now
it.
That's, here's the thing. He can bring Jedi with him, but he can't bring clone troopers. The clone troopers, while they're loyal to the Jedi and accept orders from them, they are also beholden to the commander-in-chief of the armed forces, which is Palpatine. The issue here, I'll just talk about it now. Well, first of all, let's talk about how Anakin has thrown in with the Jedi and is now having severe doubts as to what that will mean, realizing that if things go badly in this confrontation and Palpatine is killed, then his wife dies 100%. Which is sad, because if Palpatine is killed, actually it's the opposite. His wife's going to end up fine. to get back to what I was saying, Mace Windu is going with the Jedi with the intention of arresting the Chancellor. And had he been successful, this would have been disastrous for the Jedi. This would have been a complete disaster. I've had a whole talks with Dave Filoni about this, and Dave talked to George, that the problem is the public doesn't know what the Sith is, and the Senate doesn't know what the Sith is. That is not even a boogeyman word anymore. It was 1,000 years ago. So basically, the Jedi would have this guy in custody and say, he's a Sith. And they'd say, so wait a second, you're a Christian and he's a Buddhist, and you're mad at him because he's a Buddhist? But he's the president. What are you doing? It would have put the Jedi in extreme political danger, and probably really messed up the order. Now, the reason that what's really that?
It's a great point.
Yeah, that this is, you know, no one knows what the Sith are. The only people that care are the Jedi, and Yoda was the only one that was maybe old enough to possibly have seen one before the events of Phantom Menace. So Mace Windu is not making a good move here. Palpatine is aware of the fact this is a win-win, but I think Palpatine, having waited his entire life, he's sent Jedi to their death in a war, he's had some assassinated, he's seen them die a lot, but he hasn't had a chance to kill any with his bare hands. And he decides here that maybe that's the most fun option. He could be taken into custody, and it's probably going to go his way because he owns the courts, and also, what are they going to charge him with? Having a religious difference? But what he wants to do is fight them. He wants to use his superior skills and prove that the Sith are superior to the Jedi. And the fact is, the Jedi can't keep up with the Sith Lord. Mace Windu can. The best of the Jedi can. But generally, the Jedi are not that aggressive. So when they talk about a Sith Lord, that is a terrifying prospect. These guys are better fighters than your average Jedi.
Mace Windu has never seen anything like this before.
No, he has never had this kind of opponent before in his life. And, you know, Mace Windu is kind of the premier warrior of the Order and possibly the most military-minded. I mean, hell, he goes in to arrest the guy. You know, he wants to put him in a military tribunal because Mace Windu, you know, is under the impression, the correct impression, that Palpatine is behind the war. But how the hell is he going to prove that? I mean, you know, he's acting like a soldier rather than a diplomat. He wouldn't be able to prove this. He's not. He didn't go to law school. He went to lightsaber school, you know? So, but here's something interesting. When you watch this fight, I remember thinking in the theater that, oh, this isn't really a Star Wars fight until that window gets blown out. Because the biggest lightsaber fights we've ever seen happen in generally very dramatic environments and dangerous environments next to a bottomless pit or something like that. So suddenly Palpatine's office is transformed into a death trap with a giant bottomless pit out the window. I just love that.
Now, do we think that Windu really does best him here? Or is he in control this entire time?
Oh, I think Windu had him.
Yeah.
And I think it's also a better story that way, that they were this close to solving Star Wars.
Does it bother anybody else that Anakin's running in and then he slows down to a walk?
Yeah, because he wants to always look cool. Yeah.
It's always bothered me, and I'm sure it's just a continuity thing. Like, well, we need to get a shot of you running, you know, but we shot you walking in originally because originally you were there, you know, like, because they had pickups of this scene, you know, and so it's almost like a continuity shot, but I actually don't think it's needed. You know, it's like, I'm running. Well, no, I'm walking. Let me just.
Yeah. I think it's because they shot this scene in a couple different ways. Originally, this is, he was already Vader in this scene, and then they reshot it so that he hadn't made the choice yet.
Well,
this
no,
is just,
he wasn't. I mean, I remember seeing this before the pickups, and he was there already, but he wasn't Vader yet. He was always Vader afterwards, but he was, it was like a dialogue. It happened too fast. It wasn't quite, it just didn't make sense. Like, it made way more sense after the pickup shot, you know, like, I don't exactly remember what changed, but I do remember he was always. I remember the first time I saw this, I didn't buy it like I did the second time I saw it. The first time I was like, ooh, that happened too fast. And then sure enough, they reshot it and recut it together. And it was much meatier, you know, all this dialogue and, you know, this moment of choice and him not being there. He just ran in, you know, and it made way more sense.
Well, it makes it more immediate. Like Anakin has not seen what just happened.
Yep.
So he's coming in the middle of it and seeing this guy helpless. And boy,
injured.
I love this. He, oh God, and that little smile that gives before he unleashes. I mean, Palpatine thing about the Emperor. Everyone thinks everything he plans, you know, comes together, but that's just not the case. He has a plan. He has his hopes. Things go wrong, and then he improvises brilliantly, and that's what he's doing here. He had an opportunity to make himself look the victim. And he knew Anakin wouldn't stand by when this guy murdered him. And what I love also is this scene is a mirror of the scene from the beginning with Dooku. The whole it's not the Jedi way and unarmed prisoner. And when it's convenient for Anakin, he stands by the Jedi morals of, no, we can't execute this man. And Mace Windu's like, no, we have to execute this guy. Realizing, I think, that he was going to get in trouble if he arrested him. And Anakin, of course, who made exactly the same call with Dooku, suddenly is conveniently on the side of Jedi morals saying, no, we can't do that, which I just think is brilliant. I think it's wonderful that, you know, this guy is Anakin. You can already see he's forging his morality around what he needs rather than what's actually right. And because the need is so great. The need is so great that people do this all the time in life. If they really feel the need for something, they will change the world around that something to make it acceptable so that they can have it, you know, or they can perform whatever reprehensible thing that they want to, you know, perform.
Yeah, he's been checkmated here, and he has to rely on the wisdom of Palpatine that what he's done is the right thing, because if it's wrong, it's more than he can deal with on multiple levels. And and it's also playing into Anakin's natural tendencies of aggression anyway, you know.
Well, there's certainly no turning back here for him.
Well, if he's wrong here, he's wrong about everything in his life, including all the lives he's taken in the Clone Wars over the last, you know, 3 years or however many years it's been, you know, he's wrong about everything. If Palpatine is, if being a Sith is wrong, if fighting for the Republic is wrong, then basically there are some things, and this, you're right, Sam, people oftentimes, when there's something so earth shattering in their lives that the denial is so strong that it's way too painful and damaging to believe it. You have to go along with it because you just can't deal with it any other way. And that's
right.
What the scene is here. I have to believe that what I'm doing is the right thing. I have to believe in this man. He's always been by me, even when, you know, my wife wouldn't listen to me. And even when, you know, the Jedi turned their back on me, this guy has always believed in me. And now he's offering a way to, you know, to save me and to save the galaxy. And then he has this wonderful line here about, you know, they're all enemies of the Republic. And at last, we have to wipe them all out and we will finally have peace. And he's not wrong. It's just that he's also the guy that created the war.
It'll be that mechanical piece that he's looking for. And by the way, I just love when that hood goes on, we're back to Return of the Jedi. that character that we met. He that was a thrilling moment in the theater to see that hood finally go on. And this, he is now behaving the way that he would like to behave. He is no longer putting on the mask of Palpatine. That he is Darth Sidious. That is who he is. And the mask has actually been burned away because of this injury that he sustained. And he doesn't care. He's like, great. This just makes my story that much more believable that I've been, the Jedi used their magics to deform me.
Yes.
You know?
And he still beats like
the physical transformation, the mechanism was decided upon late because it seemed as though George was going for a natural aging of the character.
Yeah, Palpatine looked older in Attack of the Clones than he looked in this. You could see that they were aging the character, and then they realized, no, you know what? This is going to happen all at once. He's going to overplay his hand, dark side-wise, and just be fine with the fact that it burns his face away.
Yeah. And fine with it, right? He doesn't even rinse it off.
But that's the thing. This is a.
You think he applies some aloe or something?
right.
501st in the house.
Oh boy, here we go. This was also a chilling moment seeing it for the first time.
Oh, it's horrible. Horrible.
Here's a funny question. When we see Anakin's head in The Empire Strikes Back, it's flesh toned. When we see it in Return of the Jedi, he's pale. I'm going to just completely nerd you guys out. Is it possible that when Force Lightning is right up to your face, that it drains the color out of your face?
It has to, because that Force Lightning attack is ultimately what kills Vader.
Exactly.
He did sustain injuries there.
Yeah, he did.
Suit is damaged, and he is damaged. Whatever organic is in him is damaged.
But if Lightning comes from yourself, does it have the same impact as if it would coming from someone else?
Well, apparently if someone puts a lightsaber in your face and it's reflected back in your face, it messes you up.
Yeah, it does.
That's what we learned.
It messes you up. By the way, you forgot your lightsaber here. I brought your lightsaber back. You've got to hold on to these things, bro. Oh, there it is. I thought we were friends. That's all right.
Now, here's something. This was... I was happy about the Order 66 arc in the Clone Wars because, for me, it was always clear that it was Manchurian Candidate, that this was programmed into them. Because you'll notice that they all say, yes, my lord, or it will be done, my lord. They've never seen Darth Sidious. They have genetically programmed into them that image of him in the robe.
That's a good point. Yes.
That when they see that robed image, that's God, and that you must do what God says. And but these soldiers have never ever dealt with Darth Sidious. So when they say my lord, that is what's in their DNA. That's what's programmed into them. Or in the case of Clone Wars, that's what's in that chip in their brain, that organic brain material that's melded with their natural brain. So it's I remember Karen Travis had a version of this where Order 66 was actually in the regs manual. And I remember thinking, well, that's an interesting way to take it, but that's not correct. Because it doesn't account for it will be done, my lord. Mm-hmm. It doesn't account for that at all.
He says, my lord. When is he ever referred to? And you brought this up before. When is he ever referred to him as lord? It will be done, my lord, as opposed to sir or.
Well, that's the thing. First of all, they can't recognize him as Palpatine. It's not the Chancellor. They would say, yeah, Chancellor or sir, but my lord, that's Darth Sidious. Mm-hmm. And that's part of, it's like the clones said in the Order 66 arc that the dream is always the same and that they've seen this man in their dreams, or at least that's the implication. The Order 66 sequence is very, very sad.
It will be done, my sweet lord.
What? My sweet...
Is it George
no
Harrison?
No problem, sweetheart. Honey.
George Harrison? What? George Harrison
exactly. Clone? My sweet lord killed a Jedi. They're all going down here. Oh, it's really sad. You know what's interesting is that, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think the reason it has to be Manchurian Candidate as well is that the Jedi would be able to sense duplicity in the clones. If they were thinking about killing them, they would sense it before it happened and they would fight back. Whereas if the clones switched on a dime, the Jedi couldn't react fast enough.
And they would question it, right? I mean, they become,
yes.
You know, they've clearly become friends. Rex and Cody and all of those. You know, it's not something that they're aware of. It's unthinkable. You know. Yeah. And then Yoda, of course, survives here. What's interesting is you know, earlier we had that scene where Anakin was trying to make the decision to basically save Padme and stop Mace Windu, right? Well, I thought the symbolism is really interesting. He's in the empty Jedi chamber when he makes that decision. The Jedi have left him. It's empty. And his wife, Padme, you know, is really worried and she's far away, right? And when he returns to the temple, he comes right back to it and he destroys it. You know, it's like a complete mirror. And of course, he, you know, kills these younglings. And now Padme is still watching, right? And now the temple's on fire and, you know, the transformation is complete. He leaves the temple, a Jedi, and he comes back to the temple, a Sith, and he just wipes out all those kids, you know. And, you know, this is just unspeakable war crimes here, you know. But again, it's to your point, the Jedi are now framed as terrorists, right?
Yeah.
The Jedi are that weird order that people don't know what to make of anyway, and their power probably makes people uncomfortable, and the Republic, you know, has been winning all these wars. This was really interesting. When I was at the employee screening of Revenge of the Sith, I was in the same theater as George and his family, and when Jet comes out here, Jet Lucas comes out, the theater cheered because they're all cheering for Jet, but it was a very strange moment because it's such a dark moment because, you know, Jet gets gunned down, but the theater was just cheering the entire time. So it was like, what? It was this very, like, you know, weird, you know, the reaction to the audience versus what was actually going on screen, because people were, his whole family was cheering for him here.
And by the way, if you guys slow down and watch in slow motion what Jet does to these clones, I hope the clones have a good disability program, because he's lopping off legs and he's doing some pretty bad things to those guys. On the other hand, they're doing some pretty bad things themselves, so I guess it's all fair.
Speaking of George, Sam, you'd like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
George was sitting behind me, and you know who was sitting next to him was Robin Williams.
Oh, right.
And that's sort of my one Robin Williams story, is that they were sitting together. And at the time, Arnold Schwarzenegger, see where I'm going with this?
Oh.
Was governor.
You got my attention.
Yeah. So he was governor of California at the time, and one of the strangest things, this is before the movie started, one of the strangest experiences I've ever had was sitting in front of George and Arnold Schwarzenegger before the movie started.
Or George and Robin
George
Williams.
George and Robin Williams trading impressions of Arnold Schwarzenegger to each other.
Wow.
George Arnold was very strange. And Robin Williams was like, oh, yeah, I'm Arnold Schwarzenegger, la, 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 la. You know, and that was kind of like tomorrow during Arnold Schwarzenegger. I don't know what
and
that
George
was.
And George is like, that's right, come on, do it. Come on, do it. Kill me, I'm here, do it.
Yeah, little known fact, Arnold Schwarzenegger was at one point Anakin Skywalker in Revenge of the Sith.
That's right, that's right.
But there were problems on the set, so decided to recast at the last minute.
You saw those outtakes, didn't you, David?
Yes, I did. Oh, and this shot here, yes, the Carillion Corvette, the Tana IV, presumably.
Or Tantive, as it's called in the radio drama.
That's right,
Tantive. The Tantive IV. There are some people that say that that's not the same ship, and I say, go to hell. Get out of my face. Well, I have no time for you.
Well, let's look at the evidence. Let's look at the evidence that it clearly is the same ship we see at the beginning of A New Hope. Number one, Captain Antilles is on board that ship. Number two, there's an obvious connection to the Organa family with Bail Organa being, I assume he owns that ship. So there's two points of evidence right there. And number three, it looks exactly the same.
Right, exactly.
And it's just that one L-shaped hallway. That's all it is, you know. It's just they have to go that way, and then they turn it around, they go that way. That's the entire Tantive IV. I hate Tantive. I like Tantive.
I like Tantive. You like Tantive?
Tantive. So that doesn't sound right.
So something, yeah, that sounds nasty.
Tainted love.
Tantive IV. Bomb, bomb.
It's a big galaxy. It's a big galaxy. We're gonna call it whatever we want it. The tented.
I prefer Rebel Blockade Runner. Thank you very much.
Right.
That way, it's neither. It's not Tantive. It's not Sundered Heart. It's the Rebel Blockade Runner, and that's all it'll ever be. So here we go.
Oh, boy. And here they are arguing, and I saw Master Windu attempt to assassinate him myself.
Which is kind of true.
Which is true. Yeah.
That's the tricky thing, is that Anakin actually does have, like, these threads of truth that he can cling on to and use to justify his actions. I don't know how he justifies the killing of younglings, but you have an order that steals children and brainwashes them. I think it might have been nicer to take them and put them in an orphanage, but I guess if you can't do that, you just kill them all. I don't know.
There is really no good excuse for genocide.
Yeah, it's really hard to explain away. But then again, his wife isn't asking, so you may as well not tell.
Don't ask, don't tell.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
And that's the wonderful thing about this. This comes up later in the movie, that he's going to Mustafar to end the war single-handedly, and that's the wonderful thing about having an automated army, is you have an off switch. When you want, if you're a guy who's manipulating the war, you make yourself the president of the side that has organic troops, and then you manipulate the side that has the automated troops. And when you're done with them fighting, you turn them off. It's awful. It's really messed up.
And you get all the leaders in one room, and then you execute them.
You execute them, and you have no witnesses to what's actually gone down. You know, and the separatist parliament is none the wiser, and it's a really brilliant plan on Palpatine's part.
Now the ship does look a little different on the outside.
It's a different paint job
than it does in A New Hope,
and it looks a little more scrunched.
Yeah, there's something about it. It seems like
that was part of the evidence that it was a different ship, was the outside, that scrunchiness that you're talking about, David. That was something that was cited, but from a story perspective, it makes absolutely no sense.
The bright of this shot, and the shot before it, I remembered like my eyes squinting in the theater. It was so bright when it came onto the screen.
It's true.
You see this hallway. And of course, these two actors acting to Yoda that isn't there, added later. Jimmy Smith, he's cool.
He's not as cool as Yoda, though.
Yoda, and that CG, I mean, by the time they got to Sith, the Yoda, the CG Yoda was so good. You know, when they announced that Yoda was going to be CG in Episode 2, you had a lot of fans freaking out. A lot of fans freaking out. Well, by the time they got here, you know, it was, they were just doing such good work. Such incredible.
This is also a lot of practical stuff. This lava river and this entire planet is their models that were built. It's that whole thing of, oh, it's all CGs. No, it's actually, those were models. I believe even this room, everything is largely built out, and what wasn't was a model.
So
the Separatist Council, the War Council, the Illuminati that are on the Separatists, they work with Sidious. They know that he exists and they take orders from him, that he is probably a high-ranking member of this Illuminati, as far as they know. They probably don't know that that's Palpatine. They probably have no inkling whatsoever.
Jeremy Bullock.
Yep, there he is. And, this is interesting stuff. These guys who are trying to pick up the pieces and are slow to catch on what Palpatine's been doing the entire time.
Seems like a relatively small cockpit for a ship of that size. I always thought it would be a larger cockpit, but
in Battlefront 2, it was much larger.
I remember, the scrunchiness of the Tantive IV. I remember just kind of looking at that as kind of the same thing as like Vader's helmet being different. It's just it's supposed to be the same as different. I have a question for you guys. You know the blue shields that kind of keep this thing together?
Yeah.
I didn't. That at first. I gotta admit, I didn't get that at first. I had to have someone explain it to me. Because I didn't notice it really. Like, I thought it was so subtle that I didn't really I don't know. It just didn't make sense to me at first, the blue shields.
Yeah, maybe it took me a couple viewings to kind of get a grasp of what that was all about.
Yeah, it was one of those things that I kind of take it for granted now, but the first time I saw it, and it's hard for me with this movie because I don't remember exactly the first time what was on screen the first time I saw it, you know. But it didn't quite make sense to me, the whole plot point of why the thing was being destroyed around them, why the whole facility was being destroyed, and it's because they destroyed the shield panel, and all of those blue shields come down, and the heat starts taking down the facility. I didn't get that at first. Just thought, you know, confession, being good for the soul. Oh, and Yoda is such a badass here. He is so this shot, you know, where he just takes out the right in the chest like that, and yeah, Obi-Wan doing his thing. Hood up. This is
nice little flourish also, there at the end too.
Yeah.
I wonder what it's like for the kids who watched Clone Wars first and then saw this movie where they see the Jedi taking down clones.
Oh,
it's got to be very strange.
Really strange, yeah.
My niece is starting to get into Rebels. And she got a book of Stinky the Hutt, you know, Jabba's son, and starting to read these Clone Wars books. And I'm sitting here going, how old does she have to be to start showing her the Clone Wars? Because if she keeps watching, it's going to be traumatizing, you know? Mm. And so I just feel like I want to show her stuff. I want to start her with the Younglings arc. But I mean, the thing about the Clone Wars, and it's true with, you know, the way that the Phantom Menace was so light and kid friendly too, is that through the back of my mind, you know, I kept just thinking, God, this is all going to go so badly. You know, this is going to be so traumatizing for kids. And hopefully, you know, I mean, at the time it was like, okay, well, 99 to 2005, those kids are going to grow up and they'll be able to take it. But nowadays you can just binge watch it all. What's it going to do to a kid? You know, when do you show them this stuff and how do you kind of keep it from them? I mean,
yeah, melt your brain.
Yeah. I mean, to your point, like you're watching the Jedi, you're watching Obi-Wan take out clones, which you just, Obi-Wan's, wait, he's friends with the clones. Why is he doing that? He saved the clones, you know? Yeah. It's a lot to take in.
Here's Palpatine building his empire on a foundation of murder and violence as you cut between him and Anakin. And, you know, his very cheery sounding words against the violence that it takes to get there is really awesome.
Great shot of his eyes there. Oh. So good.
Do you guys question the choice of letting Anakin continue to use a blue saber after he had been ordained Darth Vader? Don't you think it would have been natural for him to either construct a new saber? I mean, granted,
there's no time. Yes,
the fury of the events going by so fast is so it's on the to-do list essentially at this point.
Well, yeah. And I don't know if that's necessarily. I don't know if Anakin sees himself as really having, I mean, he has been changed. He's been dubbed Darth Vader, but the Jedi have changed, right? The Jedi changed. My wife changed. Everyone else changed. I'm still doing the same thing. I'm fighting for the Republic. And you know what? It feels better now than it has in a long time. I don't know why it feels so good, but buy Newt Gunray, you know? Mm. And so he's just kind of doing the same thing. And the world around him has gone nuts, you know? Yeah. It's like what the Beatles says. It's like, we didn't change. It's the world going crazy, you know, whatever. And that's exactly how Anakin probably sees it here, you know.
Yeah.
Yes, he stopped Mace Windu, but he didn't murder Mace Windu, you know. Sidious did. Palpatine did. So I'm sure he'll get there, but to him, he's still fighting a good fight, you know.
Yeah.
He's doing it in a new way with a newfound power and a new confidence after feeling so awful for most of this movie. Now he's just like, you know what? I have a clarity now. I have a clarity.
Yeah.
I have a vision. And you're either on board or you're not. It's that, you know, you're either with me or against me. That's a biblical thing, too. You know, the sort of absolutes of, you know, this is how it's got to be, you know. So much so that he believes that, you know, these little innocent children in the Jedi chamber are terrorists. Is he probably torn about it? But probably, you know, I love that my favorite Robot Chicken sketch of all time is where he goes to his happy place. Do you remember the Robot Chicken?
Right. Yeah.
He's cutting flowers.
He's cutting down the flowers.
Yeah.
It cannot be an easy decision for him to make, but you know, he does what he has to do. He's a warrior. you know, and if he believes that it's right, he has to be so convinced that there's no turning back. There is no turning back. It's all in the rearview mirror at this point. And you know what? It serves him. It serves his. It just serves him emotionally too. You know, it's a safer place to be than to question
the right
or wrong of the situation or the nuance of the situation.
And when Anakin assumes that mantle of Darth Vader, is he doing so because he wants to be committed to the Sith and committed to the dark side, or is he doing it because there's nowhere else to go? He's trapped in a corner.
Yeah, there's nowhere else to go. No one's helping him. He wants to keep his wife and his kids safe, and that's really where he's at. And and ultimately, if along the way he can put what's wrong with the galaxy right, he's going to do that too. You know, I mean, this galaxy had been run into the ground on both sides. And he probably has some very specific ideas of how he can start putting that back together with Palpatine on his side.
Yeah, and when he's christened Vader, I mean, that's like, hey, I just found out that I'm my team is corrupt, and I got to start playing for a new team here. But because my new team is actually the team I thought I was on, so it's a bait and switch, right? He's been dubbed Darth Vader, but really, again, you know, he walked in on Mace trying to kill the Chancellor, and the Chancellor is the head of everything that Anakin's been fighting for, and the Jedi's been, you know, they've been a bunch of jerks recently. Like, maybe everything that Palpatine is saying is true. So it's a bait and switch. It's like, okay, I'm Darth Vader now, but I'm still Anakin. I'm still the same, you know, I'm still the same guy fighting for the same thing. It's just that now I see the truth, and the truth is that the Jedi are corrupt, and the Jedi are evil, and the Jedi are messing things up. You know, it's about the Republic. The Jedi have even messed with my wife's head.
Well, hey, and if you watch Clone Wars, the Jedi have even screwed over my Padawan, who I cared very deeply about.
Yeah.
They threw her to the wolves when they should have been helping her. And really, what do we know about what was really happening there? It was Palpatine isolating Anakin, beginning the process of isolation, getting rid of anyone that could possibly give him help or give him a healthy perspective on things.
Yeah.
You know, that Palpatine is the ultimate abusive girlfriend.
Absolutely. And by the way, he abuses his power to put the Jedi in a compromising position, which is as generals of a war. That's not a natural thing for a Jedi to do, no. But they have to do it. You know, so Jedi aren't made to be, you know, warriors or generals, you know, in a giant war commanding legions of troops. You know, it puts them in a really compromising position as peacekeepers of the galaxy to suddenly be, you know, warlords. Mm-hmm. So he just puts them on really uneven ground to set the stage for this manipulation to happen and for this ultimate power to be achieved. You know, the power of Palpatine to basically absolve a democracy and create a dictatorship in the Galactic Empire.
Why is Anakin crying right there? What is he crying about? Is he regretting?
That always bothers you, doesn't it?
Well, it does, because I want to know how much Anakin is still operating at this point. He is not completely sold out to the persona of Darth Vader. He doesn't do that until he has to out of necessity. He does that when Padme dies. He becomes Darth Vader so he can bury everything Anakin Skywalker was, so he doesn't have to live with the burden and guilt of losing his wife. So at this point, he's crying. He's standing there by himself. He's meditating on what just went down. And his reaction is a tear. Now, is that because he is afraid? And that's, you know, manifesting itself as he, you know, rebuilds up into his you know, he goes down that path the Sith go, you know, fear, anger, hate. Boom, Sith. So, I mean, does that keep recycling on him where he has to keep going through that process before he finally succumbs to the hatred? I don't know. I always wonder why he's crying at that moment.
Oh, I think that's part of why he's crying in the movie, so you can ask that question. I think on a basic level, he knows he's messed up. He knows that this was possibly not the best, most optimal way to...
So that just proves to you that Padme is correct at the end of the film when she says there's still good in him, because he does show remorse.
Well, yeah, and that good is always there, and but it's just not seen by anyone until Luke.
Luke opens up the door. Anakin buries that. He buries himself. He kills himself, just as Obi-Wan says, from that certain point of view. He does so out of necessity because he can't live with himself anymore. So he becomes someone else and fully embraces the dark side.
And now, in this scene, you're going to be crying. You're going to be crying. No, that's too much crying. No, we don't want snotty crying. we want slightly good in you crying.
Slightly good in you. Can you do slightly good, Anakin?
There's some slight good in you crying. That means just out of one eye. No, you're crying out of both eyes.
You got to control that, Aiden.
Yeah.
Kind of actor are you?
At least Schwarzenegger cried out of both eyes, or didn't cry out of both eyes.
One at a time. She doesn't look very pregnant here, by the way.
She ran out of that ship.
Yeah, I've lived with a woman who was 9 months pregnant. I know. They don't run like that.
Well, I don't think we're assuming she's 9 months pregnant here.
Oh, no, those are some big babies they pull out of her.
Those babies are 7 months premature.
7 months. Holy smokes.
Played by babies that are like 6 months old.
No, it's yeah, exactly.
Big babies.
Some fat midichlorians. So he's excited. He's telling her about this brave new world he's constructing, and he thinks she's going to be proud of him and be on board and share his excitement. And disappointed.
But she's just like, let's just get the hell out of here.
Yeah. She doesn't want to have anything to do with
this. Leave all this behind. All of it.
Yeah, well, he's gotta break it to her at some point, and I don't think he does the best job. No. I mean, this is not the way to
a terrible elevator pitch here. Terrible elevator pitch.
Yeah, exactly.
This is where I think that Hayden's natural creepy vibe really pays off. because in this whole scene, when he's like, we can make it what we want to be, he just looks absolutely nuts.
Mm.
I don't want to hear any more about Obi-Wan. Here's the love triangle. This is sort of the only remaining existence of some sort of love triangle hint here. Never explicitly stated, but you know, when he's standing at the door, it's like, you know.
Yeah.
Well, Anakin says you brought him here to kill me, is what he says.
Yeah.
You brought him here to kill me. What's up with that?
I've been listening this entire time.
Then whatever you're thinking that we're sleeping together, if that's what you need to tell yourself, then let's do this.
It was a long flight.
Give me a glass of wine.
I wish Obi-Wan had panicked a little bit when Anakin started choking her, because that's ultimately Obi-Wan's fault right there.
Yeah, he's just like, no, it's fine. I'm just going to saunter down this
road. Hey, you've been bad.
Like, yes, I've turned you against her, but you're the one that choked her out.
Yeah, Jesus.
I didn't mean to choke her out. I was just so angry. Well, I was taking
Think about what this guy has done in order to save this woman. And in 10 seconds,
he undoes it. He undoes it all. Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing is,
chokes her out, and he's not even looking. He doesn't even care.
There were various versions, weren't there, David, of how much he injured her? I think there was one where he had her off her feet.
Yeah.
One where she got thrown. Am I correct? Am I wrong?
And by the way, it's been bugging me, Sam. I've been thinking about what you said. I do think you're right. I think that initially he was dubbed Vader first, and that's what bothered me. I've been thinking about it, and I think I just forgot that all happened pre-injury, the whole dub, and I just didn't buy it. But you're right, they switched it.
You become Vader in that other scene where Palpatine told him about being a Sith Lord or something.
Yeah Well, he did it in that same scene, and then Dooku came in. I just am not remembering
Dooku. Dooku's dead. No,
keep saying that. Mace Windu. Mace Grievous Dooku.
God.
I'm having a tough time here, clearly.
I'm not following.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry, we're just thinking about that scene, the W Darth Vader scene, and how it was reshot. I do believe that the first time that that scene was up on its feet, he was dubbed Darth Vader before Mace Windu died.
Yeah.
I love it when Yoda knocks those two Emperor's Royal Guards against the wall. That was a huge cheer in the theaters. And such a brutal move, you know, just knocking those two dummies against the wall. And, you know.
Oh, there was all this anticipation about how badass those guys were going to be. We're going to finally see those guys in action. And
that's a lot of action right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just walks in, and then before they can even say, wait, stop, he just knocks them against the wall. What an entrance. You know,
this is just orgasmic for Palpatine to be able to finally just say everything he's always wanted to say to Yoda.
And I love that Yoda is caught off guard by that lightning. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's, you know, that's the thing. Who's seen a Sith Lord? Who knows that they can do these things?
Well, I mean, there was Duke, right? I mean, he saw it from Dooku. You know,
yeah, you're right. He should have been ready. Good call. Yeah,
but I mean, I don't think he understood the speed and the power at which it was going to come at him. You know, I don't know. I like that he's surprised there by the power of it. And I'm just having to assume that it's just because he can't believe that.
Look at Mas Vader get out of there. He's gone.
Yeah, right.
I'm out of here. I've seen enough.
Yeah.
Sorry, David. Go on.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Well, that certainly answers the question as to whether Mas Vader knows about the Sith Lord connection. You know, he didn't seem terribly surprised when his master unleashed force lightning, or his employer, or whatever you'd call him.
Either that or he's in such a hurry to blog about it.
Right.
Got to get to my laptop.
Yeah, and then, of course, Sidious is surprised by that force push.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
You know, just good stuff. This is such a great fight here.
In so many ways, for me, this is a bigger payoff than the Anakin Obi-Wan stuff that's happening. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's Yoda versus Sidious. These guys are mirror images of each other. Yeah. And let's remember, their plan here is that Obi-Wan needs to stop Anakin and Yoda has to stop Sidious. They can't double up on either one of them because if one of them is taken down, the other one will be warned and ready for him with troops. Mm-hmm. So you actually have to sneak in there and get them simultaneously. It's the only way you can make it work.
Yeah.
So, you know, these two Jedi are about to just, you know, simultaneously blow it, really. That their little plan here does not work. Wow.
I actually have always really liked this fight. A lot of people just felt like it wasn't that it just kind of went on for too long or it was too much. I really loved it. You know, I loved the brutality of it. You know, when he was just choking him out there, and of course now the tables are turned. And this is a great scene too. The fact, you know, George Lucas and his sort of symbology here. You know, he takes the fight of good and evil into the center of democracy. Right. And eventually he literally and figuratively destroys democracy as Yoda is losing.
Yeah.
As Palpatine is throwing the Senate seats from all different worlds across the galaxy, throwing them down at Yoda and just literally and figuratively destroying democracy as he is winning the fight. That's George Lucas at his best here. And this movie is filled with that kind of symbolism, you know. The empty Jedi temple that I mentioned before, you know, and the temple on fire. And then, of course, the Senate chamber and all of those kind of things, you know. You know, the soul of Anakin basically becoming more machine than man. I mean, all of these sort of metaphors. And,
there go
and
your shields.
The evil of him. I mean, he literally is descending into hell in this lava planet, right? You know, the fires of hell overtake him eventually at the end of this, at the end of this battle. You know, it's... he made a deal with the devil. You know, it's Dante's Inferno. It's all those things. You know, it's classic literature again and again and again, symbolically playing itself. And against this great John Williams score. You know, here it is. Here's the death of democracy right here.
Yes. And there was a scene.
Yoda's trying to save it and trying to stop him, and it just doesn't work.
There was a scene, too, where they show this a scene that was a deleted scene that they cut into this moment. It was eventually dropped where Padme was in her apartment with Captain Typho, and she suddenly went, oh, and Typho said, well, what's wrong? And she said, oh, I left my iPod in the Senate pod. I'll get it on I'll get it on Monday.
Right.
And he's like, oh, there ain't going to be no pods left.
Well, and you realize that her entire playlist is lost, and, along with all of her text messages.
Well, and she didn't sync the cloud because
no.
She was never
Because no one can figure it out. That's why. Well,
no one can figure it out, but also she's not very tech savvy. And
she doesn't even know what
Which is ironic that her husband becomes technology. You know what I mean? That's weird.
And he's always taking her USB cords for that damn arm of his.
I know, to charge the hand. Now, here's what, okay, here's something awesome.
Man, Palpatine, I don't know how to turn him on.
Anyway. Palpatine is laughing throughout this whole fight, and really, this is the best day of his life. He got to kill Jedi with his bare hands. He's now fighting Master Yoda. He's become the Emperor. His, you know, years and indeed 1,000 years of Sith planning has finally come to fruition on his watch. This is the best day of his life. That's what you're getting from this. You know, it's some actors, they will laugh and be villainous and, you know, it's just they're having too much fun. It doesn't make any sense. Ian McDiarmid's laugh here makes all the sense in the world if you know the story. He is finally himself. I mean, he is just giddy with how well things have gone. And the Jedi are, you know, his sworn enemy have all died. He got the apprentice that he wanted. This kid who's more talented than everyone else. I mean, everything went his way. This is literally the best day of his life, and that's I feel happy for him. I feel really good for him.
Of course, yeah. He's like the priest in Caddyshack that's having that great golf game in the middle of the storm. He doesn't want to stop. He's just.
So would this be then? Would this be Empire Day as they revealed in Rebels?
This is it.
This is Empire Day, and so this is also Ezra Bridger's birthday.
Ezra Bridger is born this day, actually. Literally.
On Empire Day. And also, two other characters are born on this day, Luke and Leia. If you assume it's
born,
the same
Oh,
day.
My God. They were born on Empire Day.
They were born on Empire Day.
I didn't even think about that. Luke and Leia were born on Empire Day.
Wow.
They're as old as the Empire is.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. That's nice work. That's See, we're good. Getting to the bottom of this, aren't we?
We're finally, after all this time, getting to the bottom of it.
Yeah.
Back to wow.
Here comes the key art shot of Revenge of the Sith in general, you know, against the big lava.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just incredible visuals here.
Of course, the lava battle has been long since talked about, since the novelization of Star Wars.
This is something mentioned. That for Star Wars fans, old school Star Wars fans like us, we all knew that they would. I mean, I'd heard they fought over a volcano and Vader fell in the lava. This is not what I saw in my head.
Not at all.
This is a little more extensive than the battle that I saw in my head. I saw more of a traditional lightsaber fight that ended up with the guy falling into a volcano and then this is literally the entire world breaking up around them and democracy crumbling at the same time and all these, everything all happening at once. It's a little bit more epic than what I thought.
You know, interestingly enough, Jonathan Rensler's Making of Return of the Jedi book revealed that the concept art for the Emperor's Throne Room in Jedi was originally lava.
Yeah, Mustafar type.
Yeah. And they changed it. In fact, you know, they had all of Coruscant. It wasn't called Coruscant at the time. That Timothy Zahn actually called it Coruscant, and that stuck.
That's right.
It was called
Had Abaddon.
Yeah, or Abaddon.
Yeah.
Had Taintavi.
Yeah.
Had Abaddon, and then they just realized they couldn't shoot it. They couldn't afford to shoot it. And hey, why don't we put the Emperor on the Death Star? But yeah, I mean. This lava, they've been threatening to do a lava planet at the end of a trilogy, basically.
Yeah.
And here
for
we
a
find.
Long time.
Yeah, for a long time. And it's just, I don't even know how I first heard about it. I don't know if it was Bantha Trax. I don't know what it was in the 80s or if it was just like kids on the playground talking about, and Vader and lava. And I don't, do you remember, Sam or Jason or Jimmy, where did that come from? Did we know about the lava thing?
It came from the novelization of episode 4.
That's right.
No. It did.
I think it was episode 6.
Yes, it was the Return of the Jedi novelization. No? It was actually
right.
Lucas.
You're right. It was Obi-Wan telling Luke
yes.
what happened.
Yes.
And I believe he fought on the side of a volcano.
However,
and where that came from was, I think that was originally scripted that Obi-Wan went into more detail about what had happened, and then they either shot it and cut it, or they didn't shoot it that way. But I know that was the novelization came from an early version of the script.
It was also during that moment of dialogue when Obi-Wan reveals to Luke that Owen Lars was his brother. So there are some inconsistencies there. It was originally published, so I believe back in a 1977 Rolling Stone interview with George Lucas, where he discussed the nature of Vader being in that movable iron lung, essentially, that he lives in. And I believe that's when George sort of threw it out there that he sustained his injuries battling Obi-Wan Kenobi over a volcano.
That's right. I remember as a child when I became aware of the implications that Obi-Wan put him in that suit. And that was pretty thrilling to realize that as a kid. I mean, I think I must have been 11 years old. And I was just like, Vader was always an injured guy. I just never had understood that was Obi-Wan's doing, which is really nasty.
All right. Now here, Obi-Wan is absolutely invulnerable because he, of course, has the high ground. So nothing could possibly happen to him, and this does get proven, as you see. High ground.
One chop.
Gets him going up, gets him coming down.
It's kind of two-ish.
Is it?
It's changed a lot. This actually changed a lot. I remember they kept like changing how many limbs and how many different things were happening here. I wish I just remembered more specifics. Why don't I remember this stuff, you guys? But I do remember this changing and being in the theater going, oh, wow, they went for three limbs. Wow. Yeah. It's because it wasn't always that way. They kept going, well, how much do we want to dial this up or down, this violence? But yeah. And I love that he says, I just screams, I hate you. And here the fires of hell actually, burn him alive.
Yeah. Only limb that survives is his artificial limb. It's really...
Yep.
Of course, Obi-Wan just leaves him. Well, I'll just let him burn to hell.
Yeah, you're my brother. It's going to let you die a slow, painful death as opposed to put you out of your misery.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I think he was considering it. Then he sees him burst into flames and...
Oh, he had it coming to him.
Well, I think the imagery is so awful that... Obi-Wan turning his back is part of what he just did right there, turning away, being like, oh, I can't watch this.
Right.
And assuming that, well, he's looking again. He's like, no, he's all right. That seems to be it for him.
I'm very badly burned.
It's Austin Powers. Can somebody help me? I might be able to stand. Nope.
I'll tell you what, though. That Vader getting injured was so much worse than what I imagined in my head. So much worse.
Oh, yeah. You ever see somebody die of a broken heart?
Choked. Yeah.
You're about to.
Yes, this is all part of the George trying to decide how much Padme's death directly correlates to the injuries she sustained by Vader. How much of Padme's injuries?
Yes.
And for my money, I mean, thematically and story-wise, I mean, I always just take it as, yeah, he did that. He is the direct and or indirect cause of her death.
Now, did 3PO put all that makeup on Padme? We got her back aboard the ship, and by the way, I gave her a makeover because more makeup in that shot.
Yeah.
Mechanical hand here. The mechanical hand is the thing that saves him, right? It's the mechanical nature of, the organic, the flesh is gone, and it's all just machine and, Oh, and here comes Palpy.
Uncle Palps.
I think Padme's death, too, because it gets debated a lot about the whole dying of a broken heart. But something not to be set aside is the fact that she has Jedi twins coursing through, you know, she's got midichlorians essentially coursing through her veins right now. And it has to come into play somehow with this shift in the Force and carrying the sons of the Chosen One, the son and daughter of the Chosen One. It must, the dramatic shift in the balance of the Force must have been a shock to her system as well. And that all comes to fruition with Anakin being completely burned away now. And any evidence of old Anakin Skywalker is gone. And that promotes a huge shift in the balance of the Force, being that he is the most powerful Jedi, essentially, that has ever lived.
Interesting. I never considered the...
The implications of Jedi, you know, Luke and Leia maybe keeping her alive there or something.
Right. And it's just, you know, with that amount of Force influence on her system, you know, it must cause essentially a shock to her because she cannot, you know, comprehend the power of the Force and that it has no way to filter it.
There was no stretcher on board, but so I had to hand carry her. Really? You don't have a stretcher on that thing? Can't you force levitate that bed? Don't you have repulsor technology on that thing?
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
In the rain, is he covered? Has he got a dome over that? Or is that rain just hitting his charred body?
And that's got to be pure acid rain, right? Don't they talk about acid rain on Coruscant?
Absolutely.
Because there's no trees.
Well, he's got to be figuring, hey, how worse can it be?
Yeah, yeah. He's like sitting there screaming. It's not because of his injuries. No, it's the acid rain.
Right. Yeah.
He's going.
The will to live.
This is David Acord here, doing this VO.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is.
Bearing twins. Huh. Yeah. I love the story too about Dave Gentile, Sam.
Yeah.
And this being how he finds out about Leia.
Yeah, for people that don't know that story, we showed Dave episodes 4, 5, and then 3, this movie, and then 6. And so he was left with the question of, there is another. By the way, look, his uniform has been burned into his skin. And they're not even bothering to remove a lot of it because they can't. It's really rough.
Yeah.
This is classic film school stuff here, you know, in terms of cross-cutting the birth of the twins and the death of Padme with the birth of Darth Vader and the death of Anakin.
Yeah.
You know, and it's very similar to what, you know, what Coppola did in The Godfather by, you know, cross-cutting the baptism with, you know, with all of the mob killings, you know. It's sort of like, you know, the innocence of childbirth and then, you know, this
the birth of villainy.
Yeah.
By the way, so this is the moment for Dave Gentile where he said out loud, he said, wait, there is another. There's twins. What do you mean? And then he called it out right as the baby was born. He called out Leia before they said it in the film. And it was a huge triumphant moment for him. And we all cheered and we're all happy that he'd figured out who there is another. And it was a huge moment for him. And then when we watched Return of the Jedi, you know, Obi-Wan says, the other he spoke of was your twin sister. And, you know, oh, but I have no sister. Yes, but let me tell you all the exposition. And this happened and that happened. And that's the story. And Gentile was just kind of nodding, going, yeah, I get it. I get it. Oh, wait a second. Is this how you guys found out? That's so lame. Because he just thought, you know, it was way more dramatic to see the child get born and discover the relationship, you know, through a dramatic scene rather than just to hear about it from Obi-Wan.
I love the reappearance of the Empire Strikes Back hiss and the suction of the squeak as the helmet pressurizes and the breath.
Yes,
you know, tying the prequel trilogy into the classic trilogy is what the end of this movie is all about.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Now you have Vader taking his first breaths as she takes her last.
And because she lost the will to live, the Force was keeping her alive at that point. And then the babies were removed from her system, taking the Force away from her system. And that's eventually what
takes away the will. You can imagine somebody like Padme, who's dedicated her entire life and gave up childhood, family, gave up all these things for democracy, and then gave up a lot of that for this husband of hers. Both of those things are gone. So I can imagine her losing the will to live. She has nothing to live for at this
point. Yeah, just a couple of kids. Just two kids, but, you know, whatever. Who wants to live for a couple of kids?
All right, all right. That's true.
This whole thing is a reshoot. If you remember, if you go back and watch the original trailer for Revenge of the Sith, you'll see that, that Vader's arms are up by his head,
yes,
almost surrender position. And a lot of people internally really worked to convince George. I remember my roommate was from ILM at the time, Charles Alanek, and he was an animator. And he just hated that Vader's pose was so weak like that. And so they reshot it with his arms down at his sides, cupped at his sides like this, as opposed to up in the air, you know, in a surrender type pose, kind of like how he is now when he does the Frankenstein walk. Right. And here is the no heard round the world.
The second no was louder when they put it into Jedi. That was the no heard around the universe.
There's Naboo.
So, David, you were telling us there were actual scenes where, because a lot of people don't know this, but instead of Jimmy Smits, it was actually Arnold Schwarzenegger who was playing Bail right. Organa in those outtakes. And you actually that's told right. me you heard George directing Arnold for these particular scenes.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I've always talked about adapting a baby girl. She will be loved with us. Give it to me.
I want you to do the scene with a slightly more emotion.
Right, okay, I'll do it. We've always talked about a baby girl. And God damn it, George.
No, no.
The dialogue doesn't work. I don't know. It's crazy because I'm trying to make it work and I am hearing the music of it in my mind, but I don't know how to say it. No.
You're not angry. You're not angry at the baby.
Right. Yes, of course.
You're passionate about the baby. It makes you want to cry.
That's right. Okay, good. Let me try it again.
Just out of one eye tears. This is I want baby tears.
I give me the baby. She will be loved with us. Do it.
That was perfect.
It's pretty passionate, yeah. It's a very passionate take. I think it's going to work. It'll work very well for you.
It's very good. You know, if you right. want to try and do the temp dialogue for Yoda, that would also be very
that's
helpful.
Right. Your old master Qui-Gon. You idiot. He's been talking to me the whole time, telling me how to cheat death and become a blue glowy. What do you know about it? You don't know anything. Idiot.
That I wasn't going to call Obi-Wan an idiot, but I've seen
you. No,
error.
You have to, because otherwise they wonder why isn't Yoda talking about how weak and stupid he is. It's just sitting there. It's like back in the day when Lou would eat his eggs, and I'd be like, Lou, you're never going to be anything better than second, and that's great. It's great for you. In real life. Look at me, 6 times Mr. Olympia. When you have, it's crazy. Wait when you see it.
This is a much better Yoda than what I've ever had. Yeah.
So you have now all of the markings of the Star Destroyers have been removed. Everything Republic about it has been changed to a colorless mechanical force. And you got Tark in there. Vader's good buddy, and one of the only Imperial officers who knows what the whole story is with the Emperor and Darth Vader and who Vader is Anakin Skywalker. We have to remember that Anakin, originally Darth Vader, was intended to be probably the hero of the Republic, that publicly he would still be Anakin Skywalker, who was a famous general in the Clone Wars, and that he wasn't going to be scarred. He was going to be this good-looking kid, and privately he was going to be the Dark Lord of the Sith, Darth Vader. And Palpatine, in Vader's injuries in the mask, gives him the opportunity to wipe away all of the Jedi. Because, you know, how bad can the Jedi be if they produced the hero that saves the Republic, right? But if there is no need to ever show Anakin's face again, or no ability to show Anakin's face again, then we never have to talk about any of them. And we can start the process of telling the public that they were this religious fanatical order, these zealots that had to be defeated because they were traitors and maniacs. And the Force, by the way, isn't real. And none of that's real. And it's all, that was all propaganda they had back then. so he can start expunging, you know, destroying the legend of the Jedi. So the fact is that Anakin getting injured in it for a PR perspective worked for Palpatine. Oh, and here's John Williams proving, you know, from Star Wars Oxygen that that is the Luke Skywalker theme. You hear the quote unquote Star Wars theme when you hear the baby. When you see Leia, you hear Leia's theme. And when you see this baby, finally you get perhaps the longest screen time of the Star Wars theme in the prequels, in terms of screen time. Right here in this moment. And I'm sure David will either prove me right or wrong when you guys do Star Wars Oxygen about this episode.
No, you're pretty much right. I mean, yeah, we won't be talking about Revenge of the Sith for a while, but yeah, I mean, the themes are really driving the whole end of this movie. You know, and you know, the nature of those themes did change. And I mean, everything kind of changed, you know, the Force theme, Luke's theme. You do hear Jedi and Luke. Anyway. Yeah, we'll get to it. We'll definitely get to it.
Yes, I'll bet you will. But it's fun to think about what Palpatine intended versus what happened, because we've all heard about how Vader ended up not as good as he should have been because of the injuries. You know, he was going to be a much more capable Sith Lord, and he wasn't. But the injuries did allow Palpatine to completely put a lid on, to finally put the Jedi away for good. Because Vader would have been an unavoidable public figure. And then with this happening, he wasn't a public figure. In fact, conversations that I've had with Dave Filoni indicated that not everyone even knew who Darth Vader was for a long time. That he was performing operations, that he had stormtroopers with him, that he did all that stuff. But that he was more of a shadowy figure. And that he was performing his master's will. And in fact, when you get to episode 4... Tarkin is way more of a figurehead for Palpatine than Vader is in a way. Vader is sort of an overseer, but really just kind of a brute that Palpatine sends places. I mean, you know, the assumption people have is that when you become a Sith Lord, that you are automatically the second in command. And that's not how the Sith look at it. You know, there's the rule of two, and you can take your apprentice, and they are the, you know, they will inherit the Sith when their time comes. But before their time comes, they're going to eat dirt. They're going to take orders from not just you, but whoever you trust ahead of them. And they're going to earn that spot. You're not going to just give it to them, because that's a generous act. And the Sith are not about that. The Sith are about consolidating their own power. And, you know, the necessity of taking on an apprentice is part of that consolidation. And the passing on of the mantle of master is one that is that happens through violence, one that the Sith accept is an inevitability, because eventually you will become too old to hold on to your power. And your apprentice being, you know, if you've raised them right, they will be ambitious and they will take it from you. But until that time, what that apprentice does, who that apprentice is, and what responsibilities they have is entirely up to you. And it is not a matter of course that that apprentice has huge responsibility and or respect. And I think we see that in episode 4. By the time episode 5 rolls around, now he's got a fleet. You know, he's, weirdly enough, after the destruction of the Death Star, he's been tasked with hunting down the Rebel Alliance. And because of that task, he's given a fleet. I don't think it was given it to him because, hey, good job, the Death Star was destroyed on your watch. Good job, here's a fleet. It was more, okay, all right. You are now motivated. Go find them. So, well, you know, Darth Vader is a, you know, he went from being, I mean, it would have been hard for Palpatine to not give him authority if he still looked like Anakin Skywalker. But the fact that he had been, you know, just torn to pieces and put into a mask, it meant that Vader could be anything Palpatine needed Vader to be. And he needed Vader to be the boogeyman. When so we, that's what he became.
That's what he is. When we first meet him in A New Hope, he essentially is your typical henchman.
Yes.
Like he's odd job. You know, he's his story becomes much more rich when you realize that he has that history with Obi-Wan Kenobi.
That's right.
Then he becomes more than just a henchman. You realize that there's more to this Vader guy than meets the eye. But prior to that, is he simply a goon prior to that?
But he's a goon. But he's a goon. But you find out in that chamber meeting where he chokes out what is he choking Mati there? Who's he choking? It's
Mati, yes.
Yeah, he's choking Mati there. That only, there's a whole level of power and a backstory with the Force, that because we've learned about the Force at that point in episode four, right? And so, you know, there's something about Vader that you realize is special, even though he's acting like a henchman. I mean, the other thing about Vader is that he's just not a politician. Anakin Skywalker was never a politician. Anakin, you know, in throughout his dialogue in the prequels, definitely showed that he didn't really understand nuance that is gray. He saw things black and white. Tell me what to do. Tell me what's right. I believe in what's right, and I will execute on it. You know, and that's true even when he's Darth Vader. He's a warrior. He's a commander. He understands battle. He understands military. He's a warrior.
He still leads from the front, even when he's leading the stormtroopers. Yes. He's still Anakin Skywalker leading from the front.
Yes, he's a warrior archetype, right? He's not the strategist. That's Palpatine. And it was also, in terms of military strategy and politics, everything you mentioned, that's Tarkin, right? That's Tarkin. Got that cunning. He understands the nuance. He understands people. You know, Vader is just pure. He's just pure brute and muscle and, you know, the dark side.
But he's exquisite muscle. He is a very smart tactician. You know, he's really good at his job. He's just not ready for
not political. But he is.
He's not ready for that. Yeah, exactly.
But he doesn't understand. He doesn't. He's got a chip missing, if you were, in terms of like, so, you know,
dealing with people.
Dealing with people.
Yeah. And it's something that he might have learned as Anakin Skywalker in peacetime, but it is not something that Vader has the capability of learning. The other part of why Palpatine keeps Vader down, because some people have that question, well, why would he? He's the apprentice. Then, first of all, remember the Sith distrust everyone, including their own apprentices. But then the other part of it is like, dude, Vader is, you know, Vader betrayed his entire order. How the hell is Palpatine going to trust someone who did that, even if he made him do that? Even if he did it for Palpatine's benefit? You know, you have to remember that Palpatine would look upon him as a major risk, and that guy would have to earn his trust. And, you know, because this guy, he turned against the people that took care of him.
It's like that thing when someone starts dating someone else by cheating on their
significant.
Then you can't, and if that's how you start the relationship, then you're just going to wonder when that's going to come back around.
When are they going to turn on you? And yeah. The fact is that Anakin was already talking about that kind of thing with.
He was already cheating.
He was. He was already telling Padme, like, I can overthrow the Emperor. Like, wow, man. This guy, where's his loyalty? And his loyalty was to his wife, but then without his wife, he's a broken man. Yeah. So, There's a lot of work that these two new people in a relationship have to do to repair that and to start building trust. But the problem is they're Sith, so that trust is going to be a little bit
strained. Old Sith wrench in the works.
Well, hey, guys,
this was great. We did it. We have now done commentary for each and every film. Dave jumped on board a little late, but Sam, you've been with us from the very beginning, and so where do we take it now, guys? Are we going to attempt the holiday special or maybe do some Marks of the Clone Wars? What do you have in mind?
Oh, goodness. I would, if you guys want to do some Clone Wars stuff, I definitely have a lot to say about those. You know, if you want to pick certain arcs and just go through them, that'd be a lot of fun.
Obviously, the Mortis arc is the one Clone Wars story that I think is just begging for a Sam Witwer commentary.
I would love to do that. That would be a lot of fun.
You can always just take it episode by episode.
Sure.
We just go through the entire series.
Start with the movie, right? Start with the movie. The movie is, it's a movie. And, I don't know. I suppose you should do select series because, you know, a year from now or a year and a half from now when episode 7's out on Blu-ray, can you imagine a day? You can do this all over again.
That would be a lot of fun. Yes, indeed.
I can't think about owning Ep 7 and watching it whenever I want. That's such mind blowing.
It is.
You know, here in December of 2014, that's a very mind blowing thing to imagine.
Right.
Oh, it's fun. It's going to be fun to go back and listen to the shows too, especially the spoiler section, and hear some of the absurdity that we've been reporting in that section. You know, all the things that are just going to be completely off the deep end. That's going to be fun. We should keep a scorecard.
you know, score along at home.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. So, well, guys, thanks a lot for hanging with us. It was a ton of fun. Revenge of the Sith is in the books. And, yeah, you know, the circle is now complete. Now we have to do all the films again with David, because David,
you bring
a lot to the table, too, especially your insight from working within the production itself. I mean, I know you didn't actually work on the movie itself, but you were there at LucasArts while this was all happening, and some great stories coming out of you. And that audio you brought of Arnold was spectacular.
Yeah, that was not Sam and David. That was Arnold and George.
It was an
actual outtake. And that was after he tried to play C-3PO. That was the first role he was cast in.
Yeah, that was... Yeah, we'll save that for when we do Clone Wars X.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, let's just say he didn't know how to be polite, like a protocol droid.
That was the problem, you know, is that originally, like, you know, Richard Dreyfuss, Arnold Schwarzenegger, they all set down temp tracks, and eventually Anthony Daniels was the one that needed to do the voice.
Richard Dreyfuss was, I mean, he was no good. R2, I'm going that way! It just, you know, it was grating in a way that, you know, just didn't quite work out for everybody. But we'll play that audio in a future date.
Yes, absolutely. That's going to be great. It's going to be really great. Because we found a whole treasure trove of this stuff. But Schwarzenegger was around during the production of a lot of Star Wars movies. It was very odd how much that guy was present. For a man who was never in the movies, you know, he was always there.
Stop it.
Stop it.
The Empire is shooting. He just doesn't like how a scene's going, and he just randomly on set behind camera just yells, "Stop it!" I love
that's
it.
That's right. That's right.
Stop it! Stop Arnold, it! You're ruining takes.
I don't care. You're ruining my life. Kill me.
We're trying to shoot a love scene here, and you keep yelling, "Stop it!" So this is where they kiss. By the way, stop it. Stop using. Come on, stop it.
Padme actually stops. Nope, I can't. Great. Well, I guess we have to keep that one. Anyway.
Yeah. A lot of interesting casting choices that didn't make it.
Yeah.
Well, you guys are awesome. Thanks a lot for hanging with us.
Well done, guys.
All right.
Yeah, we made it. We did it.
Finally did it.